All right, good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, November 6th, 2017. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening over another network or you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 515-604-9386. Our participant code is 419-303. If your cell provider blocks or charges for the call, you can call our backup number at 781-838-3728. And I'm pretty sure the participant code is the same. It's 419-303. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send them to questions, plural questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of the website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right. Okay, tonight's scripture reading, we're going to pick up where we left off last week and read in Matthew chapter 18, verses 21 through 35. So, Matthew 18, 21 through 35. Then Peter came to him, Jesus that is, and said, "Lord, how oft shall my brother sin against me, and I forgive him? Till seven times?" Jesus saith unto him, "I say not unto thee until seven times, but until 70 times 7. Therefore is the kingdom of heaven likened unto a certain king, which would take account of his servants. And when he had begun to reckon, one was brought unto him, which owed him 10,000 talents. But for as much as he did not to pay, his Lord commanded him to be sold, and his wife and children, and all that he had, and payment to be made. The servant therefore fell down and worshipped him, saying, "Lord, have patience with me, and I will pay thee all." Then the Lord of that servant was moved with compassion, and loosed him, and forgave him the debt. But the same servant went out and found one of his fellow servants, which owed him 100 pence. And he laid hands on him and took him by the throat, saying, "Pay me what thou owest." And his fellow servant fell down at his feet and besought him, saying, "Have patience with me, and I will pay thee all." And he would not, but went and cast him into prison till he should pay the debt. So when his fellow servants saw what he had done, they were very sorry, and came and told unto their lord all that was done. Then his lord, after that he had called him, said unto him, "O thou wicked servant, I forgave thee all that debt because thou desirest me. Shouldest not thou also have had compassion on thy fellow servant, even as I have had pity on thee?" And his lord was wroth, and delivered him to the tormentors, till he should pay all that was due unto him. So likewise shall my heavenly Father do also unto you, if ye from your hearts forgive not every one his brother their trespasses. Okay, that was Matthew 18, verses 21 through 35. Okay, well, again, we don't have a particular focus on the topic tonight. Do want to touch a little bit on where we are with the Sheriff's Handbook. We're complete with the Sheriff's Handbook. It just hasn't really been perfected yet. Jan hasn't been available for a while, and he's the one who goes through and checks all of the punctuation and so on. I know he's completed that already. And I got to try to connect with him. I might be able to connect with him tomorrow evening. If that happens, and we can get this done, I know it's going to take a few hours to go through the entire book to make all the corrections, but if we can get that done tomorrow night, tomorrow evening or whatever, we'll post it immediately, the final draft of the Sheriff's Handbook. And then we'll send out an email to let everyone know that the final draft is up there. Now, the draft that's up there right now is lacking maybe about 5 or 6 pages. We've added 5 or 6 pages since, and we've also made some corrections, some changes, changed a few words here and a few words there, a sentence here, a paragraph there. And we did add some, again, at least 5 or 6 pages, mostly focusing in on due process, which is probably one of the most important things that a sheriff needs to understand, because he deals with warrants, he deals with seizures, and things of that nature. And that of course, requires a due process. And all too often, it's so sad to say, I don't know that I've ever seen a legal warrant. I'm sure they're out there from time to time, but it is very rare. That's how lackadaisical they are, the court is, and the sheriff, how ignorant he is. He's as ignorant as we are to the law. You know, this is something we, the people, cannot afford to ignore. If you don't know the law, the true law, the law of the land, then you're putting America in jeopardy. You're putting your own rights in jeopardy. You're putting your family in jeopardy, your neighbors, because, you know, we have a heritage, and our heritage is common law. Our heritage is courts of justice. Our heritage is liberty, ordained by God, unalienable rights. And if we don't know what they are, we don't understand what they are and the fundamentals of what a right is and what liberty actually is, then we're subject to lose them. And that's why we're in the mess we're in. That's why these courts are out of control and nobody seems to do anything. That's why we have all of these unconstitutional statutes, and that's why our jails are literally filled with people with crimes that are no crimes at all, literally filled. You know, I know there was a judge, I'm trying to think of his name, he was coming up for Judge Bork, that's who it was, way back, I think it was in the 80s, he was coming up as potentially to become a Supreme Court judge. And he was defeated by Congress. Congress wouldn't let him in. And they really attacked this guy. But he was a great man. He might have been on the level of Scalia, maybe even greater. But he didn't make it in. Judge Bork had made a statement once, and he says that the prisons are filled 90% of the people that are in our prisons, and he was particularly, I think, talking mostly about our county jails, but, you know, I'm sure also to some degree also state penitentiaries and so on, but mostly county jails. 90% of the people are in jail because they opened their mouth, okay? And they didn't open their mouth to say the same thing. Ultimately, what it is they agreed by arguing the case in court. His point was really that a lot of these courts, you know, the town courts, the village courts, the city courts, they're what's called nisi prius courts. And nisi prius means unless first, which is an administrative process. But unless you deny the jurisdiction first, then you're swallowed up in that jurisdiction. Nevertheless, nisi prius courts do not have the power or the authority to fine or incarcerate. And yet they do. How do they get away with that? They get away with that because of ignorance. They get away with that because you don't know it, I don't know it, we don't know it, the sheriffs don't know it. At this point, even the judges in these nisi prius courts don't even know it. They don't understand when you make your defense against them and start standing on the Constitution. You know, there are a lot of these administrative courts that people get sucked into, they do not acknowledge the Constitution at all. And the whole thing is just turned upside down. So you have people that are in jail for statutory crimes that are no crimes at all. You know, they're driving without a license. You have a right to drive. I suppose there may even be people that are in jail for practicing law without a license. Well, that's not a crime either, because that's an unalienable right to be able to practice law or go for any trade for that matter. It's an unalienable right to defend yourself or help someone else, to counsel someone, to help someone to defend themselves. And yet we don't do these things. We can't do these things. They deny us of these things because we don't know it. They charge us $400 in a federal courts for justice. Here in New York, they charge $310 for a court to get into a court on the state level. I mean, and on the county, I don't remember what the county charges. But, you know, who are these people charging us money for justice? Justice is free. Justice is an unalienable right. Our courts belong to us, not them. People don't know that the courts belong to us. People don't know that that by being charged to come in, I mean, that's, you know, charging a fee for a right. The right to be heard, the right of justice. You know, you go to court if you're being convicted of a crime, and maybe they bring the charges up against you, and then you start building a defense. If it's a federal offense, often there are certain witnesses that you can't even get to even question because it's secret. They're undercover or something, or whatever the case may be. But a lot of the things is, you know, you'll try to build your defense up, and you'll bring in maybe if it's a situation where you need some professional engineer or something to make a point, like the guy that dug a hole up there in, goodness, what state was that, Montana, and he went to jail. And he had every right to be able to dig that hole, and they claimed that water, that hole caused the problem that polluted one of the streams that led into a body of water, and he had an engineering firm which came out and laid out the facts. This is not true. But in the process of all of these hearings, they denied that evidence to come into the court. They denied a witness here and a witness there. And they have another hearing and another hearing, deny more and more. And this is common. And by the time you get in to go to court to actually go for the trial, you have no defense and you have no witnesses because they whittled them away through conferences. The conferences in themselves are unconstitutional. Of course, you know, you have to have a conference from time to time. As you prepare, nothing wrong with that. But the way they abuse these processes, again, and how do they get away with it? They get away with it because you don't know about it. I don't know about it. The sheriff doesn't know about it. Nobody knows about it. And again, even the judges, as time goes on, they are so convinced, and they're taught in their law schools, their bar-controlled law schools, that this is the facts. This is the law. And again, you know, when I was taught some law by a lawyer, the lawyer taught us that, you know, don't bring up the Constitution. Just don't bring it up in the court. You don't need the Constitution. There's plenty of statutes out there you can use. It's too controversial. You can't really understand necessarily whatever the idea was. And so when you go into a court, these lawyers rarely bring up the Constitution, but that is the law of the land. How can you not bring up the law of the land? And again, how do they get away with this? It's because of our ignorance, because of our lack of understanding, our lack of reading. You know, what are people busy doing? They're busy tweeting. You know, what is that going to get us? What kind of, you know, we look at our children who are doing this, doing all these tweetings. At least a lot of us, we had a world before the world of tweet. We had a world before the smartphone, you know. But our children are growing up in this world, and that's all they know. They don't even know how to have a conversation. They know to tweet. And they're going to be tweeted right into incarceration, ultimately, statutory incarceration, because that's where we're at right now. They've created statutory jails, and we live in that statutory jail. You know, you can't get a job unless you have a number, you know, a Social Security number. Can't get a bank account without a Social Security number. In New York here, you know, at least it used to be, we used to file our papers directly. Now they have electronic filing. You can't file papers directly anymore. You have to do it you know, electronically. And it's very easy for them to reject everything, okay? At least before, you can go in with a file on demand and press it through. Or you can send the information into the mail and put a file on demand and put the clerk in jeopardy, you know, that if they reject it or conceal it or hide it or push it back or anything, they're going to be liable of a crime. And most people don't know that. Why don't they know that? Because we're ignorant. We don't read. We don't look. We don't think we need to understand the law. Well, you can't have liberty without the law, knowing knowledge of the law. You know, as Jefferson said, if a people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen. Can't happen. Impossibility. Because there are always people in power that's going to take advantage of your ignorance. And therein is why we are here where we are today. 80% of our laws are unconstitutional. And that's low. I think 90-95% of the statutes out there are unconstitutional. And how do they get away with that? They've changed the body of the Constitution on a couple of very important places. The state, for instance, they changed the way a senator gets elected. So they've taken away the power and the authority of the state to have a saying to the federal government. That's why the states can't do anything because they lack the power. They used to control the Senate. The states could stop any legislation. Okay, just like the people can stop any legislation through their congressmen. If enough people step up and say no, hey, and get their congressmen to do the right thing, you know, we can stop legislation. And it's been done. And when enough states, and over the years, a lot of the states would have stopped a lot of this just stuff going on. But because of the 17th Amendment, where they just got rid of the
power. We lost you, John.
Am I still here? Am I still coming through?
Yes, you are.
Okay. You know, because the senators, okay, with the states, you know, they were sent up there. Each senator is supposed to, each state gets two senators, and the legislators of the state gets to choose those senators. And if they don't perform the will of the state, they can recall them and send someone else. That's the process. And that's the way the Constitution was originally written. And when they changed the senators over in the 17th Amendment to be voted in by the people, and again, how did they get away with that? Because of ignorance. That's how they got away with it. Ignorance. Ignorance of the state, the people, the legislators of the states, ignorance of our governors, and ignorance of we the people, because we don't know any better. You know, I believe it's Article 5 of the Constitution that makes the point let me take a look to make sure, because we should know where this is. If I can find my constitutional book here. Here it is. So let me read this out of the Constitution. I believe it's Article 5 of the Constitution, which says... yep, it is. It's towards the end of Article 5. There's only one paragraph in Article 5. And it says here, let me see what I'll pick up. Provided that no amendment which may be made prior to the year of 1808 shall in any manner affect the first and fourth clause in the ninth section of the first article. And, okay, this is where it picks up. And that no state, without its consent, shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. In other words, their voting power. They shall not be denied to get their will across by vote, and that's through the Senate. And the 17th Amendment changed that without a constitutional convention. And I didn't even know that it could be changed even by a constitutional convention. That 17th Amendment threw off the balance of power in our government hugely. And by that process is exactly why we are in a destructive mode, exactly why we are in a position where we're in today, and it's so difficult to get out. The states, at least over the past 20 or 30 years, kind of understand this problem because they had no power. You know, there was a movement some years ago, and it's still coming in and out, back and forth, where a lot of states want to just kind of get out of the union. And it's just because they have no control over the federal government. They have no voting power. They can't stop these crazy bills going through. And if they've had this power over the past 30 or 20 or 30, 40 years, if they've had this power, they could have stopped a lot of stuff, and they would have. Anybody that was really paying attention to what the states were saying and claiming and yelling that the federal government is just out of control and getting out of control. And again, this was all part of their plan to destroy our Constitution. People don't know. You know, the New York State Constitution says that every person is part of the militia. It is the duty of every person, not every male, a certain age, or every person, okay, to defend the state, you know, and protect its border. So in an emergency, every person could be called. And that puts it to all of us, all the people. And clearly, without a weapon, how are you going to defend the state? You know, and again, people are so ignorant. That is the reason why we're in such troubles that we have today. The Second Amendment, the well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state. Connected to that, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It's understood. You know, lose that right. Okay, and you're now in jeopardy of the security of your free state, of not being free anymore. How do they get away with all this stuff? Because we're ignorant. And this is not a big thing. You know, nobody needs a college degree. You know, education should be a maximum of 9 years, standard education. You don't need any more. 8 or 9 years, that's all you need. Our children that go to school today, 8 years plus 4 years, that's 12 years, and they still don't even know what they should know, what could easily be taught in 8 years. Why? Because we're ignorant of what's going on. Really, they're just being taught mind control, to be controlled. They're taught a lot of nonsense. And again, it's all done, why? Because of our ignorance. I know people who have children these days, sending young children to school, and children don't even bring their books home. Why? Why? Because I think if you start reading them, you'd be appalled. That's why. So ignorance is the problem. And lawlessness will continue to grow because the people don't know what the law is. You know, if you expect to inherit unalienable rights, okay, if that's your inheritance, and that's what our liberty is all about, that is our inheritance, is our unalienable rights. You can't know or exercise your unalienable rights if you don't know and understand your heritage. So therein is the problem, and that's why we put together the book, and I really hope that people really understand this, and that the people really get involved when we open this gate up, so to speak, to get this project going to educate our sheriffs. You know, we've been trying to educate our sheriffs for a couple of years now, sending faxes, sending emails, sending, you know, regular mail through the mail, and it hasn't worked very well for numerous reasons. One of the main reasons is, you know, we approached it too legalistically. You know, we send them papers, court papers, and they didn't know what to do with it. They look at the court paper, they get frightened, they give it to the county attorney, and the county attorney says, don't worry about it. These guys are a bunch of nuts. And so nothing is done. They don't read it. They don't get the knowledge. And that's why we're doing this handbook project with the sheriffs. We're doing this with our new website for the sheriffs. Not connected to any other website in the sense of control. Totally for sheriff's education, period, and a place for them to communicate with each other. And also a place to ask questions, and we will research the answers and answer that and put it in writing on a page on that website. But there'll be no control by any of us on that website. The real email that may go out will be by the sheriffs themselves to communicate with each other. And they need to get together. You know, if they're going to go up against federal agencies and state agencies that are just totally out of control, once they understand the law and they understand and they start to see how severe this is And then they have to have deal with the problem, like the BLM out there in out there out west, with all the problems we've been seeing going on, you know, in Oregon and Nevada, Arizona, Utah. To deal with these federal agencies, one sheriff can't do it. They just can't do it. It's overwhelming for them, you know. And look what the feds do. They come in, they put their arm around the sheriff, and they tell him, you're going to do it or, you know, bad things are going to happen to you. You can see the stress in these sheriffs when they try to push them, because the feds know that they got to get the sheriff in charge of this thing, because the people still kind of understand that. One day they're going to remove that all together if we don't start getting knowledge. Look it. You know, if a sheriff needs to go up against the feds, they need to be able to get together in force. Sheriffs need to be able to call the surrounding counties and get the support of other sheriffs to deal with the problem in their county, within their state. They should be able to call sheriffs across the entire state and pull them together, and if necessary, across the entire nation. If we want to deal with the problems in Washington, at some point in time, we may need all the sheriffs in the United States to go upon Washington to deal with the problem out there. Yeah, that's a possibility. It could happen, and it should happen, but it can only happen if the sheriffs have knowledge, if the sheriffs have an education, if the sheriffs understand what liberty is, true liberty is, and what natural law, also known as common law, is. But if they can't understand those things, they can't stand. They have no power. They have no authority in themselves. And, you know, they have to go to a monitor. They have to go to a monitor and request, an indictment against somebody. They have to go to the prosecutor. And believe me, we know this firsthand, trying to convince sheriffs of things and explaining to them and finally getting them to the point when they realize, yeah, that is breaking the law. We see. But we can't do anything because it's got to go through the prosecutor. Go convince him. How does that happen? It's because of ignorance. They don't need a monitor to go see the grand jury. Go to the grand jury themselves. Go to the court and find out when the grand jury is meeting. Be there at 9 o'clock that morning or 10 o'clock that morning and get in there and bring your case before the grand jury yourself. Get your indictment, and maybe you'll be indicting the prosecutor or the judge, because you'll never get those indictments unless you go to the grand jury directly yourself and get your indictment in hand and file it with the clerk and move it through. Sheriffs don't need to go through the prosecutors. Yeah, they have their rules or codes or statutes or whatever you want to call them, okay, where, you know, how the process works, how, the prosecutor could call the grand jury and ask the grand jury for an indictment on this case or that case or another case. But that doesn't mean the sheriff can't call the grand jury. It doesn't mean the people themselves can't call themselves and come together. The very first grand jury came together that way. They didn't go request information from anyone. 25 free men got together and took the king on the side of the road and threatened him with an axe on his neck or signed the Magna Carta. And that's how, you know, that's the first time in history that we know about that, as far as being written down concerning, that was the first grand jury that we're aware of. I mean, I'm sure in the earlier before that, things acted in such a fashion, maybe, I don't know, but we know of that. And so out west, how often it is the sheriff that calls the people together, the deputizes, goes out and catches the criminal, brings them back, calls the grand jury, and then waits for the judge to come around and deal with the problem. But how come we don't know that anymore? Because they're ignorant. We do too many things that we enjoy and don't have any time for the things that are important, the things for our children, to keep them free, protect us from our family. You know, we all live in fear of the IRS. You know, we all live in fear of the federal government on many, many levels. And why is this? Why? Because we're ignorant. We submit. And And we have to nullify. We have to say no. And again, this is why we have to educate our sheriffs. This book that we put together, and I do believe it's a powerful book. I think we've covered all the bases. Hopefully we didn't miss anything. I don't think we did. Had a lot of eyes looking at it. I think the first few pages draws the interest of the individual reading it. A sheriff being a sheriff should be extremely interested in this book. He should have, huge eye-opening experiences just in the first 4 or 5 pages, after the index, of course, and really get a lot out of it just in the first 4 or 5 pages. It should draw them in enough to read the whole book, and we suggest in those 4 or 5 pages that the best way to get use this book is first read it from cover to cover, and then use it as a reference book, and then expand your education. You know, it's why we refer to powerofthecountysheriff.com or .org or .net. We have all three. But powerofthecountysheriff.org. And when they get up there, we've been putting that website together now for a while. Still waiting for a few things to get done technically, and I think we're just about almost ready. Again, I don't know how much longer technically to get to that point where we can now open the gates and say, let's do it. And start, getting a collection going to do this project. We know it's going to cost the total project $50,000, $60,000 or so. We have to do it. That's what it's going to cost to get about 80,000 books printed up, to get 20 books in the hands of every sheriff across the nation, 3,134 or 43 sheriffs, minus the sheriffs the states that don't have sheriffs anymore. There's probably, there's probably about 3,100 sheriffs roughly. And, but we have to get 20 books in the hands of every sheriff. Why do we have to get 20 books in the hands of every sheriff? Because they have deputies. We need to get them down to the deputies. And some of these sheriffs will call in and ask for more, and we got to be able to supply that too. But again, if the sheriffs read these books, they will understand the true power and authority of their office. If the sheriffs read these books, they will develop, if they don't already have, and most do not have, a backbone. If the sheriffs read these books, we have a real good chance to save liberty through the sheriffs alone. Okay? And each of these sheriffs will empower themselves and each other. They also will see a contradiction, a huge contradiction. This book does not deal with any conspiracies. We stay away from a few things very specifically, that we just don't want to get into because, let them develop that and find that on their own. They're going to see a contradiction. I mean, just in the first 5 pages, they're going to say, wow. And they're going to see authority. You see, that's the key to this book, is authority. It's not just words in a book on a piece of paper or anything. It lays out the authority. It makes it clear. The United States Supreme Court said this. The Constitution says that. The Bill of Rights, which is part of the Constitution, of course, said this. Okay? And our Founding Fathers said that. The Federalist Papers or the Anti-Federalist Papers and so on, said this or said that. This is authority, okay? This is authority. And they don't have that authority, on the other side. So they're going to see the contradiction. And it's not going to take much for them to realize. Look at it. A grammar school kid could see it, the difference between what is law and what really isn't, one against the other. Well, it's either this or it's that. Well, the one with the authority is the law. And then they're going to have to ask themselves the question, just like we did, what the hell's going on? How come I didn't know this? They're going to see how bad things really, really are. They know it's bad. Every one of us in this nation knows there's something wrong and it's bad. But we don't realize how far we have lost our way until we start looking at the real law of the land. So This is an extremely important project, and I really hope we're going to be able to get this going in the next week or so and start to get things happening. But when we pull the ripcord on this, we need everybody's participation. We need to get the word out to liberty groups across this nation. We need to get the word out to every one of our members to wake up the ones that have fallen asleep and get them involved and to be ready to respond at some point in time by going here or going there, particularly in the courts. We need the people to respond and give us $5 a month or one-time donation, $20, $50, $100. We need the people with the deep pockets, and they're out there, but they're not doing anything, at least not for us. I mean, this is we've got the best deal in town. We've got a real plan, and it's not just one plan. We got numerous plans. We got a plan to deal with the political problems and to take the political process back. We got a plan to take the courts back. We have a plan to give the knowledge to the sheriffs with this project alone in order to take the process back again. And so we have numerous plans working together to solve the problem. We also have case in the court, with lots of cases in one court. So we need the support on this sheriff's thing. But the people with the deep pockets, there are people out there that can give us $1,000. There are people out there that can throw us $5,000 or $10,000. We really would like to see those people step up on this project. And, you know, I think we've been here long enough and we've shown that we're, you know, we have integrity and we do what we say. You know, we said what we would do all along. We're going to do this, and we achieved that. We're going to do that, and we achieved that. And we kept moving along as the years gone by. And we have a large membership of over 6,000 members. I think it's close to 6,400 members now. I mean, just that alone, just think about that. If we can wake our 6,000 members up, I'll just take 6,000. 6,000 members times $5 is $30,000. If every member gave us at least $10, we would have enough to do the entire project. We'd be able to go out and buy the 80,000 books, and when they get delivered, we'd be hitting the ground, mailing them out, packaging and mailing. We'd get this project done in 3 weeks to a month. Every sheriff would have 20 handbooks, and we would be prepared to send the extras to those sheriffs that have larger, you know, offices, more deputies than 20. We're not going to be able to wake all 6,000 people up, I'm sorry to say. So please don't depend on that, say, $10, that's all I got to do. No, if you could do $50, do $50. Again, even if it's only a one-time thing, everybody should be thinking of the $5 deal. If everybody did, again, we would never ask for a penny. There's so many things we would be doing that we cannot do because we don't have that kind of money. You know, we're always on a thread. Every month we're struggling to pay the bills. You know, someone recently gave us a decent, donation that brought us out of the red and into the black. This month's bills, we're really running into trouble this month's bills, but we got this nice donation is going to get us ahead this month. But in a couple of months, if we continue the way we're doing, that donation is going to be eaten up in a few months, and we'll be starting to fall back into the hole again. You know, why aren't people sticking their hands into their pockets to help this cause? This is the most important cause we could do, is to save liberty. There is no other place. If people think the nation can be saved by one man, people may think that Donald Trump can save this nation. I got a bridge in Brooklyn to sell you if you think that can happen. Can't happen. Can't do it without the people. And even if the people get behind him to make the changes that are necessary that he is making, he is doing a lot of stuff. And I'm hearing things in the background, so to speak, that I'm really amazed that, wow, if he's really doing this, we're going to take this nation back. We're going to start putting people in jail. But we'll see. We'll see how that goes. But even if that happens, 10, 20 years down the road, we're going to find ourselves right back to where we're at because we didn't get rid of the cancer. Okay? We didn't stop fix the problem. The people can't afford to go to sleep and be ignorant. Our children are so ignorant. I don't know if people realize how dumb, how stupid our children are. Okay, maybe you're sending your child to a private school and you got a different thing, you know. That's one thing. But generally speaking, they are dumbing down our children. They're making them good citizens. They have no clue about anything. Morality, don't even think about it in most cases unless you're teaching them at home. But you're battling against school. You're battling against Hollywood. You know, these stupid games, they're so immoral and demoralizing. And these movies, demoralizing. Our children going to see these movies that I cringe when I see some of these movies, and they're supposed to be, you know, they're not supposed to be really that bad. I just cringe, especially if I have a child with me. You know, like, wow. How did we get here like this? Because we're ignorant. You know, we are starting to realize. So look, we got to get this word out. And again, without people reading a book, okay, that's all it takes is reading a book. And when you finish reading, you know, our life should be filled with education. It should be an ongoing education. It doesn't have to be a lot of time. But, you know, we've got suggested reading. We've got a lot of reading on our website. Read. That's the best way to really build your mind up. Just read, okay? And take some notes. Everybody should learn how to represent themselves in a court of law and to be able to recognize when you're not in a court of law, when they claim it's a court of law and you're not in it. You have to be able to recognize that. Then you have to be able to understand and know what to do. All this stuff could be learned, and it could be learned rather quickly. You don't need 3, 4, 5, 6 years of law school to learn what we're teaching. They need to do that in order to indoctrinate the people, you know. And so it's the same thing with our children. They're indoctrinating our children to be good little citizens. And, you know, again, it's going to take education to save this nation. And that's what National Liberty Alliance is all about. And action, that's what Liberty Alliance is all about. Action politically, action judicially, and action lawfully with our sheriffs. That's what we're about, and that's what we have to accomplish. So just think about that. If everyone would give $10 in our just our membership alone, we would have enough money to do the entire project without asking for another penny from anyone anywhere else. We're building a groups of people to be able that'll go be making calls soon. As soon as we get the site done and the book, which again, hopefully tomorrow, if Jan's available tomorrow evening, he might be. We can finish perfecting the book. We'll get it up there. And then as soon as the site's done, at least to a certain point, we can open it up and start to get collections of money, some donations. So once we open it up, what we're looking to do is to get everybody involved, everybody on this call. Everybody that's hearing this call, some people are listening over the web radio we have set up. Some people are listening through other, broadcasting. Other people are broadcasting. They'll come and listen here and then rebroadcast this somewhere else. Some people download our program. So if everyone just listening to our program tonight, whether on MP3 later on as time goes on through the week or live or whatever, we're expecting everybody to respond and work with us to get on the phones to our membership first. That's the plan, to call all our members and to get them involved in this sheriff's project. And, we're going to teach everyone, a minute and a half on the phone what needs to be, spoken about and get the people reactivated again, get them to come out and put a donation in and so on. And also for them also to work with us to get on the phones. And, you know, if you can only make 10 calls a week or 5 calls a week, some people could do 50 calls a week. They shouldn't be any more than a minute and a half, 2 minutes a phone call. So we're asking, you know, again, 10 calls is 20 minutes a week or 30 minutes a week. Everyone can do that. Is America worth 20 or 30 minutes of your time? Is America worth $10 or $15 out of your pocketbook? I mean, if it's not, then don't give it to us. But look, this is what we got to do. Once we go through our membership and we hit up and make that phone call to every one of our members and to try to activate them again and to come out and get involved, then everyone needs to go to their liberty groups within their counties. They need to get the message out to their liberty groups, get them to go out. And it's very simple, really. It's going to be a very small, you know, short dialogue. And basically you want to get them out to the website, because on the front page of the website will tell them everything. And a few other pages, they'll click here or there, and it'll see. And we make this website very, very simple, extremely simple. This is not a deep website like National Liberty Alliance. National Liberty Alliance has great depth to it, a lot of subpages. Whereas the Sheriff's website is going to be very, very simple, and it's all educational and communications. That's all. It's educational and communicational. And so we have to get everybody in our membership involved. We have to get our liberty groups and our counties involved. Once the sheriffs start to get involved and they start to look for COSs, committees of safety, in their counties, then maybe they'll find that there is no committee of safety in their county, so there's no one that they can contact. Well, they can contact our committee chairman for the committees of safety, and so they can call him up. And the committee and the chairman can let them know, okay, this county and this state, fine. Look, let me get back to you, Sheriff. Let me see what membership I can dig up in your county or close by and get things going for you. And then we'll get a hold of our members and say, hey, look, you know, we got sheriffs looking to talk to you, looking to work with you, looking to give for your support and to organize for communications on a local political level. Working with the sheriff, getting rid of Agenda 21, and whatever it is that you have to work with in your county. Committees of safety, you know, each one will have different agendas, different focuses. Each one will have more to do here or more to do there. You know, but we all have problems in our counties, and we need to get everyone on the same page, and we need to protect that Constitution. And that's what the plan of the Committees of Safety is all about. You know, Committees of Safety is what created this nation. It got this nation going, the Committees of Safety. Every one of our founding fathers was a member of the Committee of Safety. That's the political process that was used in order to bring this nation to become what it is, the United States of America. But we don't know these things. Why don't we know these things? Because we're ignorant. And we're ignorant by choice. They put all this entertainment out there and all these smartphones out there, and it dumbs us up. All right, anyway, I think I've went on enough. Let's see, Robert, do you have anything you want to talk about tonight or anything to inform us on? Robert? You're muted. Maybe if you're talking, I'm not hearing. All right. I don't know if all right. Anybody else out there that's a host level here that has anything to bring up? Terry, are you aware of anything that anybody has to bring out?
I know Ollie is sitting in the queue. If you wanna.
Oh, okay.
Turn him on.
All right, yeah, I see Ollie.
I'm not aware of anything else.
Okay. Ollie, you've been unmuted. Do you have anything to inform us?
Yes. Yes, hello. Okay, the big trial is starting tomorrow. Now, let me give you the big picture. The federal prosecutors are very proud of the fact that the last years they have had over a 99% prosecution rate. Okay, the way they do that is they take the trials and proceedings to a liberal stronghold just like they did up in Portland. Okay, if the governor of the state is Democrat and the mayor of the city is Democrat, that's a plus. The next thing they do in the warrants, they dream up the most egregious charges. And then in the proceedings, they go for plea bargaining. They plea bargain down to a lesser offense. If it does go to a jury trial, they spread it out. And just like in the Bundy's case, they have been in prison almost 2 years. They have spent time in solitary confinement. They have been physically abused, psychologically abused, starved. Here, about 4 weeks ago, they tied Clive and Bundy, and bear in mind, he's my age, he's almost 80. They tied him, chained him in a chair, chained Alman and Ryan to the wall, and literally beat the hell out of them, okay, and told Clive, and if he said anything, that he would get the same treatment, okay. Now, the next thing they do is rig the jury. This jury they got tomorrow, it probably, there's more than one or two tainted jurors in there. I think probably half the jurors are tainted. That they, this Bundy, the cowboy incident. Judge Anna Brown in Portland and those prosecutors up there, they looked at that like a big career advancement, making brownie points because they all thought that Hillary was going to get in. Okay. The Portland trial, as everybody knows, no convictions whatsoever. That was a big blow to them, to their record, and to their career advancement. That put the ones in Las Vegas under the gun. They were under pressure. They've been under pressure that's increased ever since. The first one, of course, is a hung jury. They were probably one abstention. The second trial was a hung jury with their one tainted juror hanging out. Okay. Now, the pressure they are under now, after the Vegas massacre, what's going on with the Uranium One dynamics in D.C., Uranium One is about to blow up in their face. Of course, in this participation, in all these trials, that is a part of that Uranium One conspiracy. It is against the BLM stealing lands for uranium and the whole bit. So the Meyer, he is going nuts. He is absolutely going nuts. Navarro is going nuts. That they are under tremendous, tremendous pressure. Okay. And that I really don't think that this trial will go to fruition. That I firmly believe that Uranium One is about to blow up, and along with some other deals, that the Clintons are about to go down, and that now all this is going to blow up in their face, okay? So, as I say, they are under tremendous pressure. I've heard comments about the U.S. Marshals. They've doubled and tripled up on their force, and they're very, very nervous. That they expect riots. They have expected riots at the beginning, but it's never been that prevalent or threatening. However, the threat is increasing in Vegas right now of violence of crowds in the streets. They are on edge. And I'll just sum up by saying this. The time is now to put the pressure on them. when they're under this much pressure, they are going to make mistakes. And right now, we have to put the pressure on them, whether we have affidavits or not. We need to be writing papers. It's all out in public, and there's nothing to prove. It's all out in public, okay? This is a huge trial. The whole world is watching this trial, this is one of the trials of the century. I'll guarantee you, it is very, very important. And with the dynamics the way they are now, with the tides shifting, and with the exposure, the daylight exposure that they're under pressure from, people in this country, they are fed up and they are under pressure, and we need to put them under. We need to put them under. I yield.
Okay, thank you, Ali. Appreciate it. Robert, are you out there? Do you have any reports or anything you want to bring up before we move along? Okay, I guess not. All right, I know we have some questions.
No, I'm sorry, I was muted.
Okay.
I don't have anything. I asked Ollie to give a report tonight because I've been wrapped up in all this other stuff that's going on with uranium. And so okay. I didn't have a report for the Patriots.
Okay. All right, and I'm hearing some rumbling from some other places that there are some big things going to happen soon also, but I don't want to talk about it because, I don't really know. But they seem to be reliable sources, but we'll see what happens, and so hopefully some big things will happen. Okay, let's now go over. If nobody else has anything, we'll move over to Brent. Let me unmute Brent. Let me find him here. I know he was here a minute ago. Okay, there he is. Hi, Brent. You should be unmuted. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. All right, we're going to let Brent take the mic. Brent has the book, The Excellence of the Common Law by Brent Winters, and his website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got it. Go right ahead.
Thanks, John. This is Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com.
And everybody else, yeah. Please mute your mic so we don't get nothing in the background. But go ahead, Brent.
Yeah, thank you. The comments that I make here may or may not be the opinions of National Liberty Alliance, but they're mine. And for what they're worth, I present them. I'm talking about our Declaration of 76. We've been going through it clause by clause, blow by blow. We've been going slower than I thought we would go. We've been at this a number of weeks, months. I think we're only up to paragraph 14, but I get sidetracked, or I sidetracked myself, I should say. Paragraph 14 of our Declaration of 76 says this. It says, he, that is King George, has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. Now, I would rather say in modern speech, although this is what it does mean, the civil power here means the non-military power. That makes it clear. He is affected to render the military independent of and superior to, or superior over is the idea, the non-military power. In other words, he's attempted to make the British Army and the British Navy in charge of the governments in America. And what King and Parliament were trying to do by doing that was avoid our common law's time-consuming procedures called due process, also called the course of our common law. Our common law is a course to follow. It's not a result to achieve. Results will take care of themselves. And that's what Jesus Christ meant in principle when he said, if you'll concentrate on cleaning the inside of the cup, the outside of the cup will take care of itself. If you concentrate on what's inside, you wouldn't be over there whitewashing tombstones, making it look pretty on the outside. The truth is, they're full of dead men's bones, and that's the way you are. You're full of dead men's bones and things that are rotten and dead. And you polish up the outside of yourself, but the truth is, you're rotten on the inside and it won't last forever. So quit the charade. Well, that's what this is about, too. It's a matter of taking care of the inside and the outside to take care of itself. If you take care of due process, the visible result at the end that everybody pays attention to, nobody's paying attention much to due process. They just want to know what happened in the end. What was the result? Well, that's all natural that the whole world would be watching. For example, we're watching the Bundy trial. We get a report, just got one a while ago, whether or not they're getting due process. Are they getting a trial by jury? Has the jury been stacked, etc.? That's the important thing. Are they getting processed? Not what is the result. That's what we need to concentrate on. Well, according to this paragraph 14 of our Declaration of 76, the king was trying to put the governments here in the colonies under the military command. That way there is no due process. You see, just when a military man gives a command, that ends it. There's no process. You aren't, as a practical matter, allowed to challenge the command of a general officer. When you're in the military context, yours is not to wonder why. Yours is not to ask questions. Yours is but to do or die, and they wanted to reduce the colonies to that position. All forms of civil law, law of the city, as we call it, that's what it means, as all forms of it, martial law demands instant obedience in attempt to command the future. Common law, on the other hand, searches the past to understand the future, seeking truth in light of past acts done, looking backwards before we look forward. How the courts handled this in the past. That doesn't occur in the rest of the world. The tribunals of South America are forbidden from doing that. Sets us apart as different, as well as the continent of Europe and most other places. Our Constitution puts its armed forces under command. Watch this close. Our Constitution puts its armed forces under command of a non-military commander-in-chief called the President of the United States, and requires him to act only at the advice and consent of the Senate. He, as a real matter, is forbidden. Our common law forbids him from waging war with the armed forces of the United States without a declaration of war. We have completely forgotten that requirement. We've fought wars all over the world. A few hundred thousand Americans have died, and not since World War II a few hundred thousand Americans have died in wars, and we've never declared war since 1941 when the Japs were declared war against, and we fought that awful bloody conflict called World War II. Congress declared war, that's Congress's job, against Germany and Britain. Against Germany and Japan and all of the Axis forces, Italy and whoever else was in league with them. But our common law, our Constitution is a brief of common law government. Anciently, it required the commander-in-chief of the militia, which they called king back then, and he was only given real power when the elders voted to go to war. The assembly of men, called elders, in those early days of the Anglo-Saxons, called the Witenagemot. the Wittenagemot, which is the forerunner to the Parliament of England, the forerunner to the Congress of the United States. Wittenagemot means old, white-headed, just means white-headed, white-bearded men, Wittenagemot, assembled together. And in those ancient days, the king, when he was given powers during war by those elders, he was given power under the advice and consent of those elders. And that ancient phrase, advice and consent, we find that in our Constitution. I think I'd mentioned I have a land deed that goes back to the 9th century that has the same words in it, advice and consent. And the elders, or the Witten, giving, and it says it, the Witten gave permission to the king at that time to sell a hide of land and 10 wagon loads of wood. He couldn't do anything. He couldn't even deal with his own property without the consent of the elders. And after Magna Carta, the year 1215, kings in England sought the advice and consent of the landholders, then called barons, and later yet, they sought the consent of Parliament to do anything. And that's the way our Constitution is written. That's a common law standard. The King of England, you see, was not emperor in England. He still isn't. Or she, whoever sits on the throne. Unlike the kings of other countries, they act in the capacity, and have in the past anyway, of emperors, which means commanders, military commanders. Now, yet in Britain, the sovereigns of Britain sometimes don military dress. In our entire history, no American president has ever put upon his body a military uniform. That's one of the most powerful and distinguishing traditions of our United States. And it's important that we be reminded of that and that we be alert to any violations of it. Even when men like Eisenhower, Dwight David Eisenhower, became president, there are a good many people that weren't too happy about that because he was a career military officer. Of course, nobody would have tolerated him wearing his uniform while he was serving as president. It was almost too much. Matter of fact, Harry Truman said later, he said it was just flat wrong. It should have never happened for a career military man to be president of the United States. And I know Truman ran against him, and he was his opponent. But at the same time, I think Truman was probably right about that. As much as I like Ike, and my family liked Ike, and of course all the military veterans liked him, and the truth is he did a pretty bang-up good job, and he was right-handed about a good many things, but it's just bad business that military men become president of the United States. I do see Truman's point. Now, maybe Truman said that for the wrong reasons, and he really did believe it. I don't know. I just know that in America, the non-military powers must be in charge of the military powers, and not the other way around. And that's what our Declaration of 76 complains of here. Now, we go into a foreign country, or we defeat another country, as we defeated Germany. We immediately took the high-ranking general officers of the army and put them in charge of that country. And, of course, then that high-ranking officer puts his choice of officers under him in charge of provinces of that country and cities and towns. That's what happened after World War II. Same thing happened in Japan. They were under martial law. That's only justified in time of unavoidable necessity, such as attack upon our country domestically by a foreign power, as happened, for instance, in New Orleans. When Andy Jackson got there, he saw that the United States was being invaded by the armies of Britain. Here, 1815, he got to New Orleans. He immediately put the whole city of New Orleans under martial rule much military command, and all outlying areas, anything he wanted. And he conscripted every able-bodied male into that could carry a rifle into military service, everyone. There were companies, of course, at that time, the men were there, were glad to do it. And amazingly, there was even a volunteer company of lawyers that took up rifles and were stationed at the far end of the ramparts. I've been to those ramparts down there. You can read about it at the Battle of New Orleans. And there was a company of lawyers at one end of the ramparts. And different groups of people, different men from different occupations formed their own units. And Jackson was right. He had reduced at that point the non-military powers under military rule because of the invasion of a foreign force and the need of immediate use of all hands with weapons, and defeated the British. That's the only time it's justified. And even then, it's very dangerous, of course. New Orleans was under military rule at the defeat of the state of Louisiana by the Union forces also. I'm not justifying that. I'm just making the point that that's the only time it is justified. Because King George, during the time of our separation from Britain, turned his British army and German Hessians loose to disband the colonies, militia, and humble them. And our Constitution now subjects soldiers even to our common law courts in non-military matters and allows the President of the United States to wage war only after Congress has declared war and provided money, which is never to be for more than 2 years at a time. Amazing, isn't it? We're ignoring our Constitution. And that way, open-ended military excursions like we've seen in recent decades don't occur. I mean, how long have we been over there in the Far East now? 15 years? That's longer than Vietnam. It seemed like Vietnam was an eternity. Of course, I was younger then, and time went slower, but it seemed like all the time that I was young, we were in Vietnam. Well, that's wrong. And if our Congress had said, no, you're not getting any more money for this because we are the ones that have to declare war, that travesty would have never occurred. As the travesty now in the Far East would have never occurred, and 5,000-6,000 dead Americans, that wouldn't occur either. Wouldn't occur either. And then you ask yourself, for what? What has it changed? No, it's just a way for people to make money and feel like there's something really big and important when they're no more than lackeys for rich, perverted bankers themselves or perverts themselves. Paragraph 15 is combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation. I want to read that one more time. This is most fascinating, what he's talking about here. He, that is King George, has combined, that means conspiracy, with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution. What did they have? Was the Constitution written yet? No. What are they talking about? Our Constitution. They're talking about their common law. That was and still is our Constitution. It is the Constitution of England. They call it their unwritten Constitution. And our Constitution is still our common law. And our written Constitution is a brief of that common law government, but it's not exhaustive by any stretch. All of our Constitution is our common law. Well, they said, the colonies are here saying, King George has conspired, that's what combined means here, with others, that means agreed to do a wrong, to subject us to a jurisdiction. Foreign, it's a foreign jurisdiction. What's he talking about? Unacknowledged by our laws. What laws? Well, our common law. and gives their assent to their actions pertaining to legislation. Here's what happened. The war, or the what they called, and still we still call it, the French and Indian War, occurred in the 1760s, about 10 years before our declaration. And the men that were then alive, the men that scribed their names to this document called the Declaration of 76 and the Constitution, were men that were wounded, or they had family members that were wounded, or their families had spent their fortunes fighting that war. Parliament put the burden of that war on the colonies. Oh, they sent their military over here, but what they really wanted to do was us spend our money and pour our blood out, spill our blood, to fight it. And the argument they gave was, well, they're the ones that will be benefiting, not us. Why should we send our boys over there to fight their troubles? Of course, the truth is, England was milking. We were the milk cow, and we produced well for them. We were only allowed to trade with them, and we had everything they needed. They have nothing, still don't have much. England's a small island, like Japan. They had to go other places to find oil and lumber, especially lumber, to build their ships. They had a large navy. They had no naval stores. They had cleaned their island of trees. It used to be said that on the Isle of Britain that a squirrel could start at Land's End, that's the southern end of the island, the place down there at the very bottom, could start at Land's End and run clean to the top of Scotland, or at least clean to the end of England, and never have to touch the ground. That was the saying back at that time. You can find it in the ancient records. Of course, it was an exaggeration, but the point was they had a lot of trees, and by the time they became a real naval power at the time of our separation from Britain, they didn't have any trees. They cut them all down to build ships, needed the timber. Well, when they finally came to the world, New World, the saying was that the resources, especially they spoke of this, and Canada still says this, they still say the resources of the old Dominion, that means Canada, will never run out. Well, that's the beauty and the blessing we've had here in the New World, our resources. We've just discovered more oil in West Texas than has ever been discovered in the United States, a larger reserve, larger than the largest reserve that we just recently discovered in North Dakota and running up into Canada. Have we even scratched the surface? Informed minds say no. Our resources are untouched as a matter of practicality. Well, England needed those resources, and so it wasn't just us that were benefiting, but we did pour out, as Americans, the colonies poured out their blood and their resources to defeat what? The French, who had stirred up the red man against us. The red man was defeated, finally, Tecumseh, defeated at the Battle of Tippecanoe, that was north of the Ohio. And the ally, Tecumseh, and the Confederated Tribes was defeated, the British defeated at New Orleans. That took care of the South. Andy Jackson in the South was the hero of that war, and William Henry Harrison in the North was the hero of that war. And both of those men eventually became president of the United States. And just as a side note, both of those men were Presbyterians and strong ones. Harrison went to he was an elder at the Presbyterian Church near downtown Indianapolis for years. And that church is still there. It's one of the most, the building's even still there. And they still meet in that building. It's one of the most vibrant churches in Indianapolis proper. A lot of young families, a lot of old folk there. I've been to that church on more than one occasion. But those are the two men that defeated the British. There were others, of course, that did a lot. But what happened was this. Quebec, that's where they defeated the French finally at the Battle of the Plains of Abraham up there on a field named after the owner. His first name was Abe. Abraham, I forget his last, maybe the other way around. Anyway, his name was Abraham. And when they defeated the French up there at the Battle of the Plains of Abraham near Quebec, they settled permanently what language, what culture, what way of thinking, what law, what government, what religion would dominate the American continent, Canada and the United States. And it wasn't the culture, the language, the religion of Rome. It was the culture, language, and religion of the English-speaking people. They settled it, and the French were gone. But then, and this is the way Parliament politics works, we've seen it in our own day, but then Parliament, just a few years later, turned around and passed, and the king signed it, what they called the Quebec Act, where they allowed Quebec to return to the Roman law, which was the canon law of the Church of Rome. They were French, they were used to that. And then, to make it even worse, to pour fuel on the insult, they extended the boundaries of Quebec clean down to Kentucky, touching Tennessee, clean down to the Missouri Boot Heel. They extended it clear to the Ohio River, down to where the Ohio River met the Mississippi. So all of Illinois, all of Indiana, all, all of Ohio, all of Michigan, all of Wisconsin, they said by act of Parliament, were Quebec. Well, all of those colonies from Virginia on up, especially Virginia, were fit to be tied because the charters they were given extended their boundaries clean to the Mississippi River. In other words, Virginia had a good bit of Ohio going straight west, half of Indiana, and the lower half of Indiana, and the lower half of Illinois. And then the colonies north of that, including, I believe, Connecticut, had boundaries extending as far as the Mississippi, about the same distance. Well, they said, we're not going to tolerate this. They're stealing our land, plus they want to extend the Roman law, the law of the city, into our country from that foreign jurisdiction. That's what it says here. It says that they're trying to subject us to a jurisdiction. What jurisdiction? Well, the law of the city, the Roman law, the canon law of the Church of Rome, as it's expressed in the Code of Justinian. They're trying to extend that. It's foreign to our Constitution. Subject us to it. It's unacknowledged by our common law. And it gives assent to the acts of pretended legislation. In other words, the Code of Justinian and all that comes out of it. That's why we went to war with Britain. Why? Because we said we're entitled to our Constitution. What's our Constitution? Our common law. Our first Congress, 14 October 1774, said the same thing. We demand our common law, the rights of it, which included also the right to keep and bear arms, which they tried to take away, the right to be free, demanding a warrant signed by a neutral and detached magistrate. That's our common law, enshrined now in the Fourth Amendment to our Constitution. They said, you're trying to take that away from us. Rome doesn't recognize freedom of speech. It doesn't recognize searches have to be with a warrant by a neutral and detached magistrate, describing the place to be searched particularly, and particularly describing the things to be seized. Well, they didn't want any of that. They wanted trial by jury. Quebec didn't have trial by jury. I don't want to realize the United States, the people that lived in Quebec, the Frenchmen up there, some of them migrated down the Mississippi Valley and landed down around Lake Charles, Louisiana, down there west, south of New Orleans. They call them the Cajuns. And because of that, Louisiana, just like Quebec, the only two places in North America that aren't strictly common law jurisdictions for that reason, because of the French and the Roman Catholic influence of the canon law and the civil law. No trial by jury in Louisiana until 1968. It wasn't required. The Supreme Court of the United States finally required it because a murder case went up and said he was entitled to trial by jury. They finally agreed with it. Losing my voice, and I think I've been on long enough. John or Gerard or whoever's there. So I'll quit now, and we'll talk more about this next time. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Brent. And we'll leave you unmuted if you want to respond to any of these questions, if anybody's got a question for you or make a comment. Any question, you're welcome. Okay, we'll take our next caller. Anybody wants to get into the queue? We only have one person in the queue at the moment, so *6 to get into the queue if you have a question or a comment. We're going to take Greg from Florida. Go right ahead, Greg.
Yeah, I just had a quick comment, maybe a suggestion on the back cover of the sheriff's thing. You may want to have a little conscience-pricking thing, such as, like, is your statute or code constitutionally compliant? You know, something that's just going to give the sheriff a little something to see as he looks at the back of it. It's pretty blank in the back of the sheriff's manual. That's all.
Okay. All right. Yeah, we'll get something. I think trying to think, there was something out there I saw, I think, in American jurisprudence that is, it talks about, you know, if the statute says one thing, and I know this is Supreme Court rulings also, but it's written up in American jurisprudence. If a statute says one thing and the Constitution says another, the Constitution must bear.
Right, and if you get them to think, maybe ask them the question, is your statute constitutionally compliant? You know, something simple like that. Maybe they'll think about it a little. That's all.
That. Anything else?
No.
All right. I'm kind of surprised. Usually a queue gets filled up. There's no one in the queue, so if anybody's got anything, by all means, just jump into the queue. *6 to get into the queue. I do know that there was a question out there. Hang on a second. Let me mute you, Greg. Okay. All right. Anybody's got a question or a comment, *6. I know there was a question floating around. Jan had mentioned to me, and Jan's not in today, so he usually goes through the questions, and we try to do our best to try to answer them. But the question was, you know, where can we find any Supreme Court ruling or something that requires an injured party in order to, for there to be a crime? And we do have something here. You know, there was, I think I was looking to see, because the way my notes are here, I think in Marbury versus Madison, I think there was a quote concerning William Blackstone, which was a legal maxim, which says there must be a remedy for every injury. Let me see, was that it? No, that wasn't it. No, sorry, that's something else. All right. We do know there is a Supreme. We do have one Supreme Court ruling that I'm aware of. It's Sherrar, S-H-E-R-A-R, versus Cullen, 481 F-945. It says here, for a crime to exist, there must be an injured party. There can be no sanction or penalty imposed upon one because of this exercise of constitutional rights. And again, that's Sherrar, S-H-E-R-A-R, versus Cullen, C-U-L-L-E-N, 41F-945. Now, bear in mind, we don't necessarily need a Supreme Court ruling for, you know, a common law principle or for a maxim. You know, we also don't need any kind of a code that really expresses something that is understood that's in the law, under common law, it becomes obvious. We look at the word corpus delicti, okay, which means the body of a crime, the body upon which a crime has been committed. And it goes example, a corpse of a murdered man, a charred remains of a house burned down, in a derivative sense, the substance or foundation of crime, substantial facts that a crime has been committed. Now, it's People versus Dick, and it's quoted in quite a few different cases, White versus State, Goldman versus Com, State versus Brown, and so on. There's quite a few cases that brings this up, corpus delicti. And so there must be a body of the crime in some sense. Let's see what else we may have here. I think that's pretty much what we have, but here's the question that has to be asked. Can anybody, and you know, this goes out to everyone here, if you could think of anything, I'd like to hear it. Can anyone think of a crime? What kind of a crime? Can anybody think of a crime that doesn't have an injured party. I can't think of anything, you know. And the state cannot be that injured party. Now, that doesn't mean that someone, can't, you know, maybe was stealing from the government. Maybe they're working for the government. They're stealing or doing something of that nature. There's an injured party there. It's the people, you know. So, again, the prosecutor can bring it to the people because the people are being, you know, they're stealing from the people. And a grand jury would indict, and that would be perfectly right. So there are incidences of that, but the government, again, in itself cannot be the injured party, and that's the key. So anyway, if anybody could think of anything, there are a lot of people in jail, for instance, for driving without a license. Well, that's not a crime, and clearly there's no injured party there. If someone wants to use marijuana or hemp oil or some kind of a painkiller or something for medical purposes or even for recreational purposes, what business is that of mine? What business is that of yours? Certainly, what business is that of government? Certainly none. They have nothing to say there. Right now, there's a big thing on oxycodone and other kind of pain meds with people are being... medications are being taken away because the government is putting pressure on the doctors, and the doctors are being accused of abusing their prescription process and giving people drugs, and it's really gotten really, really bad. I've got pages and pages and pages of people who have reported that their doctors. Must have maybe, I don't know, 600-700 people that, you know, got something from people that have been refused by their doctors any longer to prescribe anything for their pain. And some of these people who are living normal lives today cannot even get out of bed, okay? I know people that are in that situation. My wife is in that situation, very minimum her needs, but nevertheless, in order to get her to moving, she needs to have a painkiller. Who is the government that they think they can get in between the middle of that, between you and your doctor, you know? Especially when people get older, you know, we start to get a lot of different ailments and different things, and some of this is pretty bad, and life just isn't even, you know, in any way, it's not comfortable anymore. If you got 10, 15, 20 years left, who wants to spend that in bed or unable to move or in constant pain? Another problem. People are being put in jail for taking these substance that they call drugs or whatever it is. You know, it's a drug. That's fine. And if people abuse it, they abuse it. What does that have to do with me? Okay. If I need something for pain, then I need something for pain. I don't want the government to get in between there. So, again, people are, called criminals and actually go to jail because they're using some kind of what they call illegal substance. But anyway, if anybody can think of a crime that doesn't have an injured body, I'd like to hear about it. It's always, a destruction of a piece of property. And that's a crime because that property belongs to someone, could belong to the people in general, too. You know, destroy something in a government office or something. Still, it's got to be paid for by we the people. So, again, it's a people collective there. But I can't think of logically anything. But we'll see if anybody else can. Okay, let's take a call. We do have a couple of callers here in the queue. So let's take a caller. 3550, you've been unmuted. Go right ahead. What's your first name and your state?
Hi, I'm Pauline Lentz in Florida. I'm sorry?
How you doing, Pauline?
I'm doing good. I'm from Duet, Florida. You ever heard of it?
Heard of Florida.
Oh, it's old country Florida. But anyways, I did have something to say about your comments just now about the opioid crisis, but it's kind of irrelevant, and I think that anyone who has dealt with what it does to people who are abusing opioids knows that that's not a victimless crime. And it was funny that you brought that up because my son was horribly injured by a drunk driver, and then he was prescribed fentanyl and, you know, paraplegic, and it's very difficult. So now it is difficult for him to maintain his medication because there's always, you know, always questions about, oh my God, he's going to get addicted. And so that he is a victim of the people who abuse it is what I was, that's what I was going to say. But listen,
I'd like to respond to that. He's a victim of someone in power abusing their authority and getting between your son and his doctor. This is between
It's not just that. It is also, you know, the fact that people who abuse it, their families are victims. We're all victims because it costs us, and it costs us dearly, you know,
well,
in medical care.
Let's look at that, though, again. You know, there are lots of things that people can abuse, and it affects themselves and their families.
Sure.
That are not
alcohol.
But here's the point, though. Here's the point. You know, it's the problem with the people and education, and that is the key.
Are you not angry that pharmaceutical companies have pushed this stuff for financial gain?
Well, again, we're falling into an argument that is trying to take away other people's rights. Government cannot control the behavior of people. That's the people's job to do.
Hold on,
I'm going to give you plenty of time to talk, but let me get my point out. The government cannot get in the way of people's controlling their own behavior. If I'm an alcoholic, the government has no right to get involved with me. Now, if I injure someone because I'm an alcoholic, well, I'm going to have to pay the toll for that, whatever that may be. You know, if I'm driving drunk and I hurt or kill somebody, I'm responsible for that. People certainly should not be driving drunk. You know, I personally think that if someone is driving drunk, I think the best way to deal with that is for the police officer to take the keys away from the individual, have the car towed, and if the person can't get home on their own, drop them off and drop the keys down at the county court. It'll be the county court where the grand jury might be, and let the grand jury deal with it. Okay, but you can't make a statute on certain things to control people's behavior, but clearly that is putting people in jeopardy. So, you know, drunk driving maybe could be something that could be, you know, something could be a law possibly. We'd have to really think about that. But again, you know, drinking, okay, cannot be against the law. It's up to the person's...
Yeah.
You know,
of course
same
not.
Thing with any kind of a drug, whether a person uses a drug for recreational purposes or for municipal purposes, that's their business.
You're preaching to the choir on stuff like that. I'm just saying that things do have consequences,
and that was
my point.
Yes, that is the key.
So, I wanted to ask you. Attorney Winters was on, and he seems like a real historian more so than anything else. And so I looked him up, and he does have he's very deep into history, and but I also noticed that he has been had his license suspended twice, and I was wondering if he might be kind enough to explain what happened that he had his license suspended twice.
Mm-hmm. Brent, are you here? You're on.
Yeah, am I on?
You're on, Brent. Go right ahead.
Hi, Mr. Winters.
Yeah. We have an adversarial system here in the United States. Again, we're different than all the rest of the world. When we go into court, it's pretty rough. It's a very dangerous place. And,
well, I was just wondering what you were suspended for.
Let him
finish.
Talk.
Yeah,
sure.
Talk.
I'm sorry, we have a delay here.
It's a very dangerous place, and our system is adversarial. Our common law is an adversarial tradition. And when we go into court, we fight. And when we fight, the powerful party often gets the upper hand and uses it against people. That's what we're talking about here, for example, with the Bundy trial. We're talking about the powerful party getting the upper hand. And I spent, and I still do, a good many years defending people in federal court in tax crime cases and advising them before the grand jury. Often I advise them not to talk. And John Ashcroft, Attorney General of the United States, who had opposed me when I ran for Congress, he had hired even the campaign manager for my opponent. He decided it was time to make my life miserable, and he had a policy at that time that if lawyers, defense lawyers, were in the federal courts and they were not part of a law firm and they had made less than $40,000 a year for 3 years running, that they should be indicted. And he went out after a lot of lawyers. Now, that's what your good Republican politicians will do to you. But at any rate, that's what happened. I went head-to-head with the federal government. I didn't intend to. I didn't choose to. But if a lawyer is doing his job, that's the kind of thing that happen. And my license was suspended, and but it wasn't taken away, and the courts of the jurisdictions where I practice wouldn't let the federal government take it away, but they wanted to take my license away. It was pretty rough for quite a while. It still is in some ways. But anyway, go ahead.
No, I just, listen, Mr. Winters, I wanted to explain to you, I apologize. I don't mean to seem like I'm talking over anyone, but there's a delay on my phone. I don't have a great signal out here in the country. So if you'll at least give me that, I apologize. I didn't mean to seem to be talking over anyone.
Well, if it was a delay on the phone, it wasn't your fault. I just want to be able to talk, and then you
sure.
can talk, and we want you to be able to talk, too. But anyway,
okay.
that's a short answer to a simple
question. Do you have anything
else? So do you agree with common law? I mean, is that the basis? But then you just, if I misunderstood you, please correct me, but you said we have a common law system.
That's right, and our system is in contrast to the rest of the world because it's adversarial. That means when we go to court, we fight. It's a highly regulated fighting, but it's a fight. When you go to a tribunal in South America, there is no fight. Just the government decides what they're going to do with you, and the lawyers work for the government, essentially.
Well, that's bad.
That's bad. We complain about that here. But it's not as bad here. We at least have the machinery in place to fight. And it takes, a lot of times it takes a young man to go to court because there has to be energy. You're in battle when you're in the courtroom, especially in a criminal case, but also, of course, you're dealing, even in a non-criminal case, you're dealing with people that face the loss of their life, their liberty, or their property, or a combination of all three. That's true in a criminal case, and that's true in a non-criminal case. You're facing the loss of property in a non-criminal case. And all three of those stand and fall together. People think that there's something more important about property. Listen, you don't have a life unless you got property. Matter of fact, your life is your property, and your property are your rights. All those things are mixed up together. So when you go to court, and when you go to court, it's warfare. No question. It's our answer to bullets and bloodshed and clubs like they use in South America and have a revolution about every 2 or 3 years. Here in America, we say no. If the courts are open, we go into court and we fight. And we call it battle by trial. Used to be trial by battle. In our common law tradition, we had what we called trial by battle also. All those things are who we are. And it's very important because we believe, as Romans chapter 1 tells us, Paul the Apostle says, that the truth is buried under an overburden of lawlessness. All the old translations say unrighteousness. And the only way that that truth comes out, because we ourselves are so dark, we're so flawed, we're so rotten, we're so self-serving, all of us, that for right to be done, we have to mix it up. And the truth won't be shown otherwise. And it is amazing what happens in trial. And in the situation I was talking about, you'd asked me about myself, it's like all situations. When you really go to trial, there's no telling what will happen at court. There's no telling what will bob forth from the flux of battle. And it is rather amazing and exciting to see what comes out of people's mouths when they get really flustered and upset and there's a fight going on. Go ahead.
Right. No, I agree. But, you know, I'm wondering, and you quote have been quoting some Bible verses, how do you feel about separation between the church and the state and church and courts? I personally don't think it has any place in the courts. I don't think that people should be judged if they... I'm a good person. I don't go to church. I don't believe in the Bible. And I don't need a book to tell me how to be a good person. But I understand that other people find comfort and guidance in that. But I still don't think that that has anything, that it has any place in the court system.
Well, the people who wrote the Constitution of the United States and the people that have served on the Supreme Court in the past and the vast, overwhelming numbers of Americans disagree with you on that point and always have. And the laws of nature of our Declaration of 76 and the laws of nature's God are phrases that refer to the Bible. The laws of nature's God is the Bible. These are the laws of nature, unwritten in the nature of things, and the laws of nature's God written in the Bible. And the word separation of church and state don't occur anywhere in our Constitution. There is no such thing. There never has been any such thing. Those are words lifted from a letter that Tom Jefferson wrote to the Danbury Baptists, who were concerned about him and his, they thought he would attack people because of their religious point of view, which at that time, of course, was purely Christian. There wasn't anything else that had any influence in America at that time. And not only that, Protestant Christianity dominated America just short of 100%. And so we have to deal with history, and history is fact, and our country arose out of that kind of a culture, a Protestant Christian culture. We can reject that. We can say it's not true. We can say it doesn't matter, but that doesn't change the fact of it. It doesn't change the fact of who we've been for all these centuries. It doesn't change the fact that we've been the greatest engine of wealth and prosperity the world has ever seen. And that has a lot to do with Protestant America and how it happened and why it happened.
Do you think that there should be freedom of or freedom, freedom of religion, or just do you? I mean, I think
there clearly should be freedom of religion, but not freedom from religion. People, everybody has their beliefs, and if someone wants to be an atheist and share that, fine. If someone wants to be a Jew and share that, that's fine. It doesn't matter who or what you are, we can all participate in the process, but you still can't deny where our nation comes from and what our heritage truly is. And I'll give you some examples. Let me read some quotes. Thomas Jefferson. If a nation expects go past that. George Washington said, "The favorable smiles of heaven can never be expected on a nation that disregards the eternal rules of order and the right which heaven itself has ordained." That was George Washington. Thomas Jefferson said, "God who gave us life gave us liberty. And can the liberties of a nation be thought secure when we have removed their only firm basis, a conviction in the minds of the people that these liberties are the gift of God? That they are not to be violated, but with his wrath. Indeed, I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, and that his justice cannot live forever." Benjamin Franklin said, "The worship of God is a duty. George Washington again said, the fate of an unborn millions will now depend under God on the courage of this army. Our cruel and unrelenting enemy leaves us only the choice of brave resistance or the most abject submission. We have, therefore, to resolve to conquer or die. George Washington again said, I am not sure that never was a people who had the more reason to acknowledge a divine interposition in their affairs than those of the United States. And I should be pained to believe that they have forgotten that agency, which was so often manifested during our revolution, or that they failed to consider the omnipotence of that God who is alone able to protect them. Again, Benjamin Franklin said, only a virtuous people are capable of freedom. As a nation becomes corrupt and vicious, they have more need of masters. John Adams said, our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to a government for any other.
Then the First Amendment of the Constitution says it guarantees freedoms of religion,
right,
speech, writing, publishing, peaceful assembly, and the freedom to raise grievances with the government. And so your attorney just said there's nowhere in the Constitution that says there's freedom of religion.
No, you're free. Did he say no? Now, wait a minute.
Did I misunderstand?
Wait a minute.
You misunderstood.
Whoa.
Yeah.
No,
okay.
I didn't say. Number one, I'm not his attorney. Number two, everything
no,
I
no,
say.
No, no, I'm sorry.
I'm talking. Everything I say is what I say. It is not necessarily the opinions of these other folk in L.A. And yes, the First Amendment says that. Don't put words in my mouth. I didn't say that. There is no
what
such
did you
thing
say?
As freedom. There is no such thing as freedom from religion, and there is no such thing as a person who doesn't have religion. That's why it was written that way. You've got it, whether you acknowledge it or understand it. Everybody does. It's not a live option to not have religion, because religion
no, and,
is a man.
And by the way,
religion, religion is a person's response back to their final arbiter of right and wrong, which.
Okay, let me go back to this.
No, I'm not done talking. No,
no, let me go back. I did not call
you.
I did not call
you. You stop and let me finish. As I said, no one is free of religion. And you said a while ago you were a good person. The Bible disagrees. Jesus Christ disagrees and says there's none good. No, not one. The Apostle Paul. That includes you and that includes me. It's self-righteous to shake your hands and say what a good person you are. I know better. And I don't even have to know you to know better. There's no such thing as a good person who's not out for themselves. That's why we have an adversarial tradition. That's why Christianity has been so important to us all these centuries. And that's why we are who we are. You can be who you want to be, and you can try to fight with me. It won't do you any good, and it won't change things. It won't change me. It won't change the truth. It won't change our history, and it won't change our law. Our law, fundamentally, is the Bible. William Blackstone said that. Justice Joseph Story of the Supreme Court of the United States said that. Justice James Wilson of the Supreme Court of the United States said that. George Washington said that. James Madison said that. John Adams said that. And when you're saying those things that you've said, you are getting personal, and you're trying to fight with me. You've got two choices. You either be decent and civil toward me, or you'll have to go off the air and not talk to me anymore. And you're not being civil. You're lying about me, and you're being accusatory. And I don't like it. I hope you understand that.
Okay, we did lose the caller. I want to let you finish. She may still be here, but I don't see her anymore. I did have to mute her while you were talking, and I was going to give her a mic back, but she's not available to give her a mic back. But if you're still here, I think it was Pauline, if I recall. If you're still here, hit star 6, get back into the queue, and I'll unmute you if you want to respond to any of that. Our founding fathers all, most of them, if not all of them, I think I could say most of them at least, were believers in the Bible, believers in Christ, believing in the Christian religion. And the key to our common law is the laws of nature's God. God is the king. He's the only one sovereign. And that's the key. You know, we receive our sovereignty, if there's such a word, from God, okay? God ordained us liberty. He ordained for us to have the power and the authority to write a constitution and put that constitution underneath us, which is the law of the land. But there must be one sovereign. And the world has always understood that. That's why most nations have had kings. The kings are supposed to, of course, be the rulers and do the right thing. The king originally, you know, when we go back into England, was supposed to be the sovereign, and he was supposed to represent the free people. And, of course, they always go astray as time goes on. We know in Israel, going back into the Old Testament, that God was the king, and God ruled the people for 400 years as king of the nation of Israel. And every time the nation would go astray here or there, they would fall into all kinds of problems until they repented, and then they were found back, under the grace of God again. And this went on for 400 years. And eventually they asked for a king. And God said he was their king, but they wanted a king like other nations, and they got a king, and everything fell apart after that. And therein was all the problems. They gave him Saul, and we know that story, how all that went. Now, England, when a king was developed in England, they came in with a king to hold the place of a sovereign, because they understood that point. There's got to be one sovereign, but it's God that's the sovereign. And they, too, ran into the same problems. America is the first nation that I understand since Israel, going back thousands of years, America is the first nation since Israel that has made God their king. He's the king of the court. He's the one we receive all our liberties from, our unalienable rights, the right to self-rule. We made a covenant with God in the Declaration of Independence when we called upon him, and we spoke about nature's God and to be under his rule. So we are a Christian nation, there is a quote out there, and I think it was Jefferson, but it could have been Benjamin Franklin, says that the Christian religion is the most friendliest to man because it is accepted and compassionate to all people, no matter what religion. And that's the way it is. But anyway, I think her name was Pauline. If you're still out there, hit *6, and I'll give you your mic back. But I can't find her. She may have left the call. Okay, so we'll go to our next caller. Eric, go right ahead. You got the mic.
Okay, thank you. Can you hear me?
Sure, go right ahead, Eric.
Okay, yeah, that was rousing good stuff. Okay, great. Yeah, real good stuff. All right, so just a few housekeeping questions that I've been wanting to have answered from you and Brent. Where's my notes here? John, real quick. You said that you seem to know this chapter verse in the Bible where it says, the Bible is for you to read, each one of us Christians individually. Can you remember off the top of your head what that is?
Not particularly, no. If you can give me a few more words that might be more accurate on that verse, I might remember. But look at, people have to have, people have to have that relationship with Christ themselves directly. That's their business, and they need to go directly to the Word to get that. Now, there are some people maybe that can't read or anything, and of course, other men can teach other men, and we can go and listen to our pastors, we can go to church, we can listen to all kinds of audio in different places, and all that is good. But when you're taking someone teaching you, especially when they get into the spiritual things, the deep things of God, you have to check it out for yourself. You can't trust others for that. You have to open your Bible and really look for yourself. I look at my relationship with Christ. I don't look at it as religious or religion in any way, shape, or form. I've gone far from that many, many years ago. I look at it as a father-son relationship, and that's how I see it. You know, we're under, when we're born into this sin-cursed world, you know, we have our parents, and we're under the influence of our parents until we become of age, but then we come under the authority of God. And ultimately, our parents should be reflecting and representing God during our childhood. And, I mean, that's what a Christian family would or should be doing. And once a person, again, becomes responsible for themselves and they're on their own, they still have to answer to a father. And that father is the Lord Jesus, of course, if you understand that. Now, some people reject that, and that's okay. They're welcome to be with us. They're welcome, in our courts, in our government. They're everywhere. Again, Christianity is the friendliest religion out there. We're acceptance to everyone, but we still have to stand on the principles. And generally speaking, as God tells us, his laws are written in our hearts. And so it's available for everyone to be able to tap into just your heart alone. Without having to go into the Bible, you could tap into your heart. You know what's right or wrong. You know when you do evil, when you injure someone, that is wrong. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not commit adultery. We all know these things. Nobody needs to tell us that. That's why we can, in our law, in our land, in America, we can still share these things, and people do not have to believe to participate and be in agreement, at least with our conclusions, because the conclusions are obvious and self-evident.
Yeah. No, that's great, and I appreciate all that. You used to know this, or you knew it at the time, but it's probably just because you read the Bible a lot, and it was fresh on your mind at that point. But that's great. I appreciate it. Yeah, this, without recourse to the common law, the Constitution's hard to understand. I think it's even described as being dangerous to try to interpret it without recourse to the common law. And so we have this problem now with this freedom of religion deal, because it's become, like so many different things, have become twisted, perverted. And so there's this thing with Scientology now, is this show, and certainly not into this kind of TV, but it's real fascinating. But one of the things they promote, this actress, this Leah Remini, and this fellow who used to be high up in Scientology named Mike Rinder, they promote this idea that the federal government, when it comes to religion, they won't get involved. They keep their hands clean and they don't get involved. Well, it's just criminals looking after other criminals. That's the way it's always been. Jefferson has a quote about that, about priests, and he was anti-clerical. But we have this problem because people just don't seem to understand. And, Brent helped me to understand this to some degree by saying, this had to do more with the fact that there were 9 states out of the 13 that had a state-mandated form of Christianity. Like they had either chose Anglican or something else. I don't remember the details, but it really had only to do with Christianity by and large. But like so many things, it's become twisted and perverted, and so everyone thinks that you can bring in all kinds of gods now. But really, what I noticed even before taking NLA's course and getting Brent's book on Constitution and Declaration of 76 was that there is a Christian catch. If you're Muslim, you're not going to be allowed to stone your woman in the street. If you're a Scientologist, you're not going to be able to rob people and lock them up, which is what they do, and they take parents away from the children and children
and
away from
the
parents.
Us, and even our heart tells us that's all wrong. So,
exactly. Right. And it's real. No, you're right. And it's real simple to get. But this is something we have to deal with, because we've been raised in this morass of ignorance. But my housekeeping questions for Brent are these, and I have, and there's another one for both you and Brent. But for Brent, Brent mentioned this book, and I couldn't find it online. I was hoping he mentioned it again. Where he talks about this fella. He would have commanded the army, but we decided to go with Eisenhower because he had a German name for the end of World War II. But this fella wrote a book where he highlights it, that the civilian soldier is the one who still has his own creativity, and he's the one that can save the day. I was wondering if Brent can tell me the name of that book.
Am I still on, John? I guess I am.
Okay.
That name of that book is The American Military Officer, and it was written by General George Marshall. And it was published when I read it, and that's been 40 years ago. Yeah, 40 years ago. Over 40 years ago. So I don't know who publishes it now. I don't know if it's available, but if you look at the Library of Congress, surely it would be there. It's not a thick book. It's a paperback. George Marshall, simply written for a simple, quick read. And the name of the book is The American Military Officer. That was the way it was named then. But at that time, that I remember, it's published by the Department of Defense for military officers to read. And but it's a book that's enlightening because George Marshall understood the difference amazingly. Looking back on that book, having read it in years, I've read it more than once, though it was that good. He understood the difference between the law of the land and the law of the city. And by the way, George Marshall was the one that was fully qualified to lead the troops into Europe, and Roosevelt chose Eisenhower. And he said, the excuse he gave George Marshall, because he was really the man in line to do it, he said, I couldn't stand to go through this war without you at my side, George Marshall. But Marshall said at the, he sent out a general order after the war. And general order was to all court marshals, because our boys were guilty of war crimes just like, well, not just like, but as well, there were some that were tried. And he said, as to the court martial, the Japanese officers and the Japanese men and the German, the Nazi officers and men, he said, of course, obedience to orders cannot be the exonerating fact. And, of course, that's what was decided at the war crime trials also, because at the law of the city of Germany, Japan, Italy, all the rest of the world, if you obeyed the government, you couldn't be convicted of a war crime. But under our common law, and that was the decision that was made at Nuremberg, and I probably related the story I told you about William Franklin, one of the prosecutors that was there, he told me that story himself. He said the first question they had to decide at Nuremberg was, what law are we going to prosecute these Nazis under? Are we going to prosecute them under the law of the land, which is the common law of England, Canada, the United States, New Zealand, Australia, and Northern Ireland, all of Ireland, common law country, or are we going to prosecute these Nazis under the law of the city, which is the law of Germany and Japan? Japan was under the German code, just like Germany, the Code of Justinian, renamed the German code. And they decided to prosecute them under the law of the land, or common law, because that was the only way they could possibly get a conviction, because they were all going to plead that they obeyed the government. That was their defense. And they did all plead that. The Japanese pled that at their war crimes trials, and the Germans pled that. But it didn't work. Eichmann stood on the stand, the scaffold, in Tel Aviv. And he said, I obeyed the law of my flag and my country. And the fault for the crimes of which are complained should be laid at the feet. I'm getting the quote pretty close. Should be laid at the feet of the government officials. And that was his defense, and he died saying that. He believed that. He believed in the law of the city. He believed in the law of Babylon, the evil empire. The Germans were infatuated, as were the Russians, with Rome. You know, the Germans carried the Roman symbols in the battle. It was all a reconstitution of the Roman Empire, the glory of Rome. Well, they were going back to Babylon. But General George Marshall said, he put out a general order to the court marshals of Americans, and he said this, obedience to the government can be a mitigating factor, but it cannot be argued as an exonerating fact. In other words, no American was allowed to say, well, I did what I was told. I did what my officers told me to do, to kill all these civilians, or whatever it was. In America, I don't care what the government tells you to do. You're responsible before God to do right. And if that means disobedience, that's what it means. But I caution people, and I caution anybody that's listening now, if you think something isn't right that the government tells you to do, and you can still do it without disobeying God, my advice is go ahead and do it. But if obedience to government, the very act of obeying government, is disobedience, clear, without question, unambiguous disobedience to God, then you better stop and consider, because in the final day you're going to answer for it. And that's why we in America, we take an oath as military men, and we've always done this. This is different than Frenchmen and Germans. We say we take an oath to obey not all orders, as they say. We say we take an oath to obey all lawful orders. Big difference. That means we have to decide what's lawful and what isn't. And we better have that figured out, by the way, before we, if we're in the military, we better have that figured out before we go into battle. Because once you get into the heat of battle, you don't have time to think about it anymore. You better know. I remember interviewing military officers, academy men, back when I was a military man and trying to sort through this. I was young myself. And I'd ask them, well, have you thought about this? Do you know this? And I'd usually try to ask my superiors. And I discovered that they were wholly ignorant of the whole concept. And I know it more, understand it more now than then. But they would get upset. They would get threatened. They wouldn't know what I was talking about. And I discovered at that time that we as a people don't know the difference between our law of the land and our law of the city, because the law of the land has even, it even pervades our military services, the martial law jurisdiction. And it ought to that degree anyway. But we need to think these things through beforehand. And we as non-military people need to think them through beforehand too, because in the heat of some decisions, you don't have time to rethink it through. You've got to act. That's why God says in Hebrews chapter 5, exercise your senses so you can discern right from wrong. And it becomes second nature to you. And you won't keep making the same stupid mistakes over and over and over. As we get older, inevitably, if we're God's people, we've got to get wiser. We've got to get better at it. And by the way, when you get better at it, life becomes more enjoyable. The path of the justified man, not the just man. There is no such thing. There is no such thing as a good man. But the path of the justified man, the one that God has justified, gets brighter and brighter, says the Bible, unto the perfect day. And if you're living any other way, your life will get darker and darker. And you won't know it until the door finally shuts on you sometimes. So I encourage people, the laws of nature, and the laws of nature's God are our organic laws as Americans. The laws of nature unwritten in the nature of things, the laws of nature's God written in the Bible. Well, Eric, I appreciate the question. I hope that came close to saying something that was responsive.
Yeah, no, that was super great, and I appreciate it. You got me thinking about a lot of different things.
And by the way, Eric, if you can't find it, all you got to do is Google that book. I'm sure someone's got it out there for sale. I've Googled books long out of publishing and never thought I would find them, and I've Googled them and found them, and usually find them pretty cheap. So, but.
Okay.
Yeah, and I don't know what happened to my copy, Eric, or I'd send it to you because it's buried in my book someplace. I'll let you borrow
it. That's awesome. Yeah, I appreciate that. That'd be really awesome. I'll go look for a copy. But, so here's the last housekeeping question. But you did bring up something I did want to discuss, but I can do that later. So I got one of these watered-down, recently I got Brent's winterized version of the Bible. I got two of the three volumes, and it's real nice to have. And then the one I have before is the King James, but I got this watered-down version. And the inscription on the back, it makes me a little nervous. I wanted to ask you about this because it seems like the slow and steady creep thing that the evil empire does. It talks about how and I had asked both of you this question maybe a year and a half ago or something like this about who wrote the Bible, how long did it take. And the back of this watered-down Bible, it says that it's 2,000 years in the making, and it makes it seem like people are still writing it, as if when they come along and give a new version, it's okay if they change things here and there. And I remember John answered, because I took notes on it, I'm pretty sure, that John said it took 300 years, it took 39 men, it was 300 years, and then after going to Brent's Bible study, Brent, you talk about how there's three periods of time when the laws of nature are suspended, and that's when most of the Bible was penned. The 40-year periods, you got Moses, you got the life of Jesus, you got Elijah and Elisha, and these three periods, all around 40 years in time, it's not a mistake that most of the Bible books were penned or written then.
It's actually about 1,600 years. You know, you go back to Moses. Moses wrote the first five books of the Bible. And goodness, I forget, maybe that was about 1500 BC, roughly, I think. And then, of course, the last books were written before 100 A.D. You know, John's Revelation is, of course, the last book in the Bible, and it makes reference to the fact that there's nothing left to be added. No man is to take away or add to the words of this book. And if you add to the book of Revelation, you're adding to the Bible, but it is meant to, the point is not to add to the Bible. This is it. That's we've got the whole Word of God there. I don't remember exactly the year, but it was around 1600 B.C., I believe. Am I correct in that, Brent, when Moses...
Well, no, I understand. That's right. And that was the time of Moses. What I was getting at was over that 1600 years, approximately, there were three 40-year periods when the Bible was actually penned. In other words, it wasn't just penned continuously over 1600 years here and there. There were three 40-year periods, one time of Jesus Christ and the apostles, and then the time of Elijah and Elisha, and then the writings of Moses, of course. Now, that's, in general.
Right. That's pretty accurate, I think, that I'm thinking of, because, yes, you have all of, Moses and then another group of writers, and then, of course, the New Testament. So, yeah.
Okay. That gets at what I was after, because, yeah, it's not 1,600 years continuous, but it is from the beginning that it started till the end that it that John finished.
Yes, and okay. During those three 4-year periods, during those three 4-year periods, significant because during those times, 120 years total, the law God saw fit to suspend His laws of nature, now and again, sometimes quite a bit, in certification. We call those miracles, in certification of what was being written during the time of Jesus Christ and the apostle. There were suspensions of the laws of nature. The author of those laws saw fit to suspend them, and we call those miracles. That's what a miracle is, a suspension of the natural courses of the laws of physics, in other words, the laws of nature. And we see that during the time of Moses, and during the time, of course, during the time of Moses, the sea was parted and all the other things that happened. And then also during the time of Elijah and Elisha, the axe head floated, the iron floated on water, the laws of specific gravity, And we're suspended. Just one example among many. And the sundial went backwards and all that. And then in the Newer Testament, of course, the life of Jesus Christ, as one historian of the times put it, was a blaze of miracles. And the gospel record just on every page. And as John Locke, the man whose phrases are in our Declaration of 76, because Tom Jefferson wrote it, he said that John Locke was one of the three greatest men that ever lived. John Locke said this, I'm quoting him. He said, the miracles of Jesus Christ established his authority as proposer of doctrine. In other words, John Locke said that what Jesus Christ said is true, and his authority to say what he said was established because he, as God in human flesh, suspended those natural laws to certify what he had said to be true. That's John Locke. Well, anyway, okay, back to John or Eric, whoever's talking.
Yeah, and you had mentioned something about watered down. What was that? What were you trying to say there, Eric, with something you read in watered down or something?
Someone had shared with me, and it's the same person that got me my King James Version, someone who means a lot to me in my life, and she had got for me a mother-like figure in my life. She had got for me this Bible version for people that come to her church and they just begin their Christian path, and you know, a lot of these people are adults and they've never been to church before, so it's, you know, it kind of reminds me almost like the Bible I had when I was a kid in church, and
we don't really have to, you know, give papillon to the children or to an individual that's a beginner. You know, the Word of God is powerful, sharper than any two-edged sword, you know, able to cut down even to the marrow of the bone, you know. But look at, you know, by God's mercy, I had been blessed very young in my life to have a really great Bible teacher. And I learned the principles right in the beginning. As a matter of fact, those very same principles that I've learned in studying the Bible is what I use in studying common law and looking at history and so on. You know, again, this great Bible teacher who I've had all my life, he died a few years ago, but he remained a Bible teacher to me all my life, and most of my life. And one of the main things he taught me is let God be true and every man a liar. You know, we can read studies and we can, you know, see other people, you know, what they have gotten out of the Word of God, the meat of the Word, and as they lay out how they come about coming to these conclusions. But we have to follow through and trace them through with our Bible alongside those commentaries or those studies. No one should. It's very dangerous to read a Bible with commentaries. You really got to be reading the Bible. You can use a commentary to get an idea, but you have to really find it in the Bible, the conclusion to come to the, you know, the necessary verses, line upon line, precept upon precept, to come to the final conclusion that you've got and that you discover. And this is the important part when you get into the more media part of the Word. But the Bible in itself, as far as the gospel, is a very simple thing, you know. Ultimately, and it really, you know, it brings us to the point of repentance, which is a simple idea, and turning away from our sins and turning ourselves over to God. And from that point forward, you're always warring against the flesh, and you should be reasonably successful in living a better life and a much moral life. But of course, you know, you're still a man, and you're still going to fall into sin. Every one of us, you know, have to continue that battle until we pass to the other side. I like the King James for quite a few reasons. One of the main reasons, you know, you've got two analytical concordances that you can use, and I've always used two. I've used Young's and I've used Strong's, and sometimes they're contradictive in a way. I find, Strong's analytical concordance kind of leans towards the Baptist persuasion, so I believe he must have been a Baptist or something, particularly in the Baptist area, baptism area. But they, you know, basically they usually agree. Young's analytical concordance, I found, in my opinion, is the best. But again, they're both very good. But that's why I like the King James, because you can go right to the Greek and right to the Hebrew, look at the original words, and see how many places God used that word, and read within the context of those areas, and you can get, you know, conclusions there. Sometimes God will use a word in two different ways, and then when you're trying to interpret a verse to understand which way he really means something, you know, you could try both conclusions, and usually it becomes a logical deduction. Well, this one doesn't work too well, but this one works pretty good. Sometimes words have more than one meaning, and that's usually the case in most cases, phrases and words throughout the Bible. But the key thing is being able to go back to the original Greek and Hebrew, and you don't need to understand the Greek or Hebrew to pronounce it, to spell it, or to articulate it in any way. Just the fact that the way they list these things out in the concordances are very helpful. And again, those are the principles that I have taken into common law. My way that I was taught to study the Word of God, I take that into, you know, other places. I did that even in my work, you know. But here in looking at common law and all the things that we discuss, you know, we have to be very careful. And we'll see the contradictions as we lay things aside each other. So.
Okay. All right, great. That's great. I appreciate that. I don't know what King James I have. I don't know if it's either of those, but okay.
But you know, you don't need a watered down version of the Bible, because look at the power is to get the word as accurate as possible, and none of these Bibles are that accurate. There's plenty of errors in King James. And that's okay that there is. You know, there's more than enough of it interpreted correctly. You know, to give us what we need. But, you know, where it becomes a problem or a concern is on the deep study of the Bible. That's where, you know, you have to really fine-tune it. And again, that's where your concordance come in. And because, remember, you know, the interpretation into English, you know, that in itself is sometimes, you know, and errors are made. And some of these errors that I've seen, I can understand how they made the error, because maybe they didn't have a spiritual depthness in a certain area when they were interpreting, you know, certain words, because God didn't reveal certain things also, especially when you're reading end times, looking into Revelations and looking into the end time things. You know, so there are certain things that God hadn't revealed to man yet, you know, through his word, of course, and or open up, or maybe that individual just didn't have that depthness in a particular area, and so logic was used on the on the earthly side of things, you know, because sometimes language is very strange and it just doesn't work. So they interpret it with in a way that's a little closer, that works things out logically, because, you know, whatever is being said in the English, it makes logical sense. But when you look into the spiritual side of things, and if you try inserting a potential another meaning of the word in here into that place in the Bible, by using concordance to come to those conclusions, because you can prove that word has more than one meaning, which one is being used. Logically, on an earthly sense, that the conclusion looks much better. But on a spiritual sense, the other one is the one that's right. So it's a little odd on the earthly side, but it doesn't really injure the interpretation of the Bible in these places where it's that close to try to figure out. You know, the Bible really should be read and studied spiritually as much as for moral reasons and for obvious other reasons, but for moral reasons and so on. But again, when you do that, you have to be very careful line upon line. And you can't trust the studies of another man. You have to check that person out. You have to follow their logic and the Bible verses that they use to come to the conclusions. And in many, many cases, if you're real serious, you got to go into the concordances and you go to the original Greek and Hebrew. You just have to do that if you're going to be true to coming to the correct conclusions and be comfortable in what your conclusions are.
Okay, that's excellent. Then real quick, one last thing, and Brent made me think of this when he was talking about how we better get it straight, what we believe. You, John, and all, you made allusions to this earlier, and you said you didn't want to talk about it because you don't know for sure. And Ollie had made, Ollie seemed to allude to this stuff too, and hear about it in other places, and we talk about it sometimes on the Thursday night call after we stop the recording, the Committee of Safety. But this thing about the positive military, and you know, these books you recommended, Making of America and such, and the real George Washington, it seemed real clear that the General Washington could have crushed the British Army, the Redcoats, and the Hessians, and the Loyalists, and the Indians that were on their side. He could have crushed them at least two times, maybe three, maybe even four. He could have really crushed them if the Continental Congress had given him a standing army. But, and with good reason, they were terrified of such a thing. Because, you know, and they had studied history, and they knew about it, and all rebellions had gone south. They just traded one tyrant for another. Ours was the one that went right, you know, for, I mean, I guess in modern times, the only one, and I don't know if any other ever went well. But the point I'm trying to make here is that when this positive military, they're doing this stuff in the background that we don't really hear about, and mainstream media doesn't publish it, but these things that are happening, like with the Saudi princes, 30 being arrested, and Trump supposedly, he's doing these things, I think it's important for us that we keep in mind that if we don't handle this stuff at the local level, and like Brent was saying, if we don't have our ducks in a row and know what we believe in, then it's going to be kind of a similar issue to what the Continental Congress feared. That's one of my fears. You see what I'm getting at?
Well, you know, I missed your point when you said we got to keep in mind, because my headset started to beep and I had to plug it in and I had to take it off, so I missed that, the last, I guess, 30 seconds or so.
Okay, well, what I'm saying is that if this positive military, this stuff that's going on that none of us can confirm, if they are doing things in the background with Trump and they're starting to make arrests, like with the Podestas and stuff, what I'm saying
is... That's not going to come from the military side. If it does, I'd be very disturbed with that.
Well, that's what they keep... Well, this word, I can't confirm any of this, but I can see these little signs.
No, I'm seeing the judicial not the judiciary, but the Justice Department making some moves is what I'm hearing about.
Okay.
And that
well,
means arrests would come from its proper place. And that, you know, you can't look at if the military steps up to save the nation. No matter how bad things get, we have to be very concerned and question what's really going on here, because that in itself could be part of the plan to really destroy us. And So I'd be very concerned. Look at either the militia, the people through the militia could do it, the sheriffs can do it, the Justice Department could do it, and we with the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury can do it.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's just because I'm real concerned about it. So that's what I was looking for. All right, gentlemen, thank you very much. I appreciate it, and I yield. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
I'm sorry.
Okay, let's go to Greg in Florida. Greg, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hey, I got a couple little short points I wanted to make. Do you know Wolfgang Halbig?
I don't. Brent?
No, I don't. Wolfgang, okay. Is that what you said?
Yeah, Wolfgang Halbig has been investigating the Sandy Hook incident.
Okay.
And he has actually been fighting them since the onset of it. And he actually is going to be going into court because they say one of the guys claims that he lost a child, and Wolfgang has offered a reward of $25,000 to anybody who can prove their child was killed there. So he has a court appearance in Lake County, Florida on November 15th to depose a supposed father. And this is part of the... it may be a good idea to maybe get some courtroom observers down in Lake County, Florida on November 15th to
see how this... Yeah, that sounds very interesting. We should. And, get a hold of whoever's leading that committee. Get a hold of Jan if you can't find it. But go on to our committees and get a hold of the chairman of the committee for, the courtroom observers.
Yeah, and he's going to depose him for 2 hours. The other part I wanted to bring up was you guys were talking about the separation of religion and state, and I remember a lecture, and I believe it was from Chris Ann Hall, who said that the separation of religion and state basically means there is no official state religion, not that there is not to be religion in there.
Well, that's pretty accurate, and that is the point. Look, you can't have a particular religion, the Catholic or the Presbyterian or the Episcopalians or this or that or whatever, the Protestants.
Well,
that'd be a problem. But we all exercise our own religious beliefs and practices on the one hand, but on the other hand, our courts, there's no other way to go about it. When you go into court, your hand goes on that Bible. When the president accepts, being the president, takes his oath, his hand is on the Bible. Ultimately, that's across the board everywhere. The Bible is used for that purpose because you can't take it away from there because that's where we come from, the basics.
Right, and the point being that there's no official state religion, but you can be religious in your government. That's the whole point, I think, that you need to make to that lady that was there that was asking that, because I think she was confusing that with you guys can't have religion. That's not true. You can be very religious in your government. You just can't have an official state government.
Well, yeah, that is the point. I agree with Chris Ann on that. That is precisely the point.
So I think that lady kind of got offended because it was going off on a tangent that didn't hit quite right.
Yeah, if she would have listened a little longer and just been a little more patient, we can, look, a conversation requires silence while one person is speaking. And you have to let them finish, and then you eventually get your time to speak, and that's how we can communicate. And she didn't have the patience for that, maybe. I don't know. She did mention that she was having a problem with the timing, there seemed to have been a delay, and we can appreciate that. But she was, kind of cutting Brent off when he was trying to finish his point. And I muted her. But I was gonna unmute her when Brent was done.
I've done my
get into the queue, star six to get into the queue, and we
right. Well, I've done my 2 minute limit, so I'm gonna stop right there at my 2 minute limit.
Okay. All right. Thanks. All right,
thanks.
Let's go to our next caller. We only have a couple of people in the, the queue. So let's go to Mary Bonneridge. Go right ahead, Mary. Mary Bonneridge?
You couldn't hear me. I've had my mute on. I'm sorry.
Okay.
If you want to leave me till last, just because there's something I want to throw out at you guys and to those who are on the Monday night call, because it's free only through tomorrow, and I think it's a way to help fund not just the NLA. It's pretty amazing, and it's with precious metals to boot, mm-hmm. and with Paul being gone now. It's pretty interesting, and it's, again, free. I don't know a whole lot about it, but that's the only reason that I signed. It's free, and I now have time to look at it. It's in pre-launch. So I'll talk to you after.
Yeah,
give me
maybe,
last.
Maybe you can, we'll bring you in right before the end of the program then. Just get back in
yes.
with you.
That's what I said. Leave me till last.
Right. How much time do you want? 5, 10 minutes? How much time?
5 minutes, not even. I'll read this little. There's four things to that are just to explain.
Right, get back
something.
Into the queue, and if it sounds interesting, then we'll try to get a private meeting with Jan and a few others and see what we can work out, and then I can
I'm going to tell you, you'll put a link up or you won't, and anybody that's on that wants to go ahead and do it can go ahead and do it, and that's why I'm going to encourage you to put a link on.
Okay.
I don't know a whole
lot
about it.
I like that, you know?
Yes, it is, so get back to, bring me in last.
Okay.
Okay.
Right. Hit the star six again. Let me take the next person. Okay, let's go to another Mary from PA. Go right ahead, Mary from PA.
This isn't Mary.
Oh, well, it says Mary from PA. Who's talking?
Seriously? It's Jeff from Albany, New York.
Oh, how you doing, Jeff? Long time no talk to.
Has been a while. Yeah, hey, this caller that just mentioned, he said a deposition. I thought he said taking place in court, which wouldn't be correct. But deposition in Lake County, Florida on November 15th. I'm going to be in that county on November 15th. So I really would like to be a court watcher for that, wherever that's going to be. I just want to know if I can get the details.
They're going to get the details over to our committee that runs the courtroom observers, and you can go out and go under the committees, go to courtroom observers, and click on that page there, and you'll be able to get the name and phone number of the contact. And let's see. Director Terrence, there's a 201, a New Jersey number, and I know Ann Carl has his name under there also as an assistant chairman for the courtroom observers, and his number's up there too. Matter of fact, Carl's up in your neighborhood. He's in the Albany district also.
Yeah, I've met Carl, yeah. Those guys...
Communicate with them. They'll let you know in advance, and I'm sure they'll get an email out. What was the month that was going to happen?
This month, November 15th, you said.
Oh, so I'm sure they'll get something out like right away, and then follow up with a few of them reminders between now and the 15th, because that's only a week away.
My impression is, though, that this gentleman that was on the phone did not relay that information to them yet. That's why I was kind of
hot on it. Well, yeah, he didn't yet. He didn't, and we're going to count on him relaying that information, tomorrow maybe, you know.
So. All right. Well, I'll reach out to Carl tomorrow then. All right. Thanks, John. Nice chatting with you.
All right.
Take care.
You.
All right. Yeah, bye-bye.
All right. Let's go to Felicia from Florida. And if anybody else wants to get into the queue, star six to get into the queue. Felicia,
hello?
Go right ahead. Yeah. How you doing, Felicia?
Yes, sir. Fine. Okay. I just wanted to know what time that deposition was for the courtroom jurors in Lake County.
Yeah, I don't have the details, so... we're going to have to wait for them to get a hold of one of the... Well, maybe they can get back into the queue and give us some details for us to have right now. Let's see.
Yes, sir, because I did a project on
that. Carl's in the call, so he can make some notes and get it out. And also other people that are asking can get the information. So was that you, Greg? I think it was Greg. Let me pull Greg in here. Let me pull Greg in, okay, Felicia? If you want to get back into the queue, hit star six, right?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay, Greg, go right ahead. Okay,
well,
Carl says he's not the chairman of that committee, so but go ahead.
Yeah, that was me.
What information do you have at this point that you can give us?
I watched a YouTube video on an interview with Wolfgang Halbig, and he... mentioned that on his interview, and I've got the YouTube link here that I can send to Jan, and give you it's a long interview, so I can give you the minutes to where he goes through.
Well,
but
I've
got it sorted through. He didn't give a time, but he did just said November 15th, and he's going to have a two-hour deposition with Leonard.
Well, I don't know that a deposition would be open to the public. Brent, is that normal to allow a deposition to be open to the public?
No, but it isn't in a courtroom. There's no judge there.
Yeah.
And if both sides want to do that, I suppose they could, but I've never heard of such a thing. And I can't imagine it happening. I don't think a judge would approve of something if they'd get in a fight about it. But I don't know. Who knows? You can do whatever you get away with.
What Wolfgang said,
yeah.
He said he would like to have people there, but he wanted to make sure that they were respectful. So I thought that's right up our alley. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. In most cases, if you get a crowd there, there's going to be some disrespect.
Well, if it's our courtroom reservers, then I don't.
In the video, did he give a time and a place?
He just gave the date. He gave the date and the place, Lake County, Florida court. And so he actually gives his phone number out. I guess I could call him and ask him.
Yeah, if you can get that phone number and then go look up whoever's running the committee for the courtroom observers and get that information to them. And if you can't find that person, try to get a hold of Jan. You know, I know Jan's been busy
now.
But
I'll look for the courtroom observer for the Lake County, Florida then.
Right.
Okay.
Well, no. Look for the committee chairman for the courtroom observer. It's a national thing. And we just whatever state and county, whatever is going on, we just pass the information on to others, and hopefully some people will respond. You know, if you get two or three or four people to respond and help someone to be there to be there and hear and write an affidavit on what they witness, it's always helpful.
Well, the real critical part about this is that this is all part of the National Defense Authorization Act of 2012, where they allowed illegal propagandization of the media. And so this is why we're getting all these false flags, because they can allow it to go through the NDAA.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else, Greg?
Nope.
Okay. All right. Anybody else out there? Star 6 to get into the queue. We're out of people. We only have Mary left. Let's see. I just got a message from someone. Hold on a second. Let's see. Felicia, are you sending me that link? Is that what it is, the YouTube link? All right. Anyway, I'm not sure. All right, Mary, we got about 10 minutes. You got the mic. Go right ahead.
Okay.
Anybody else wants to get into the queue for a final call, you know, star 6, but otherwise, go ahead, Mary.
I will really try and keep this very brief. It doesn't sound very very confusing, and I have to apologize that I really don't know a whole lot about it. Because I just got this late this afternoon myself and opened it up again and was looking. Okay, there's a company, the person that invited me has been following them and really looking into them. And apparently there was a pre-launch opportunity for today and tomorrow to sign up for free for a lifetime membership. Otherwise, it appears that it's going to be $199 a year for a membership. So that's why I intruded tonight on using this venue.
Mm-hmm.
It's free up until, I believe, midnight tomorrow night. Okay? It is done by ID number. So you'll want to sign up and put a link with that ID number at the NLA website. Anybody who signs up, I'm going to have to give my number, and that's fine. I just did this. I don't even know if I'll end up doing it, but if there's extra, I'll roll it into the NLA. They're This company is promoting precious metals, not fiat. which has been a great idea. If the company does the right thing, it may be a way for everybody to help finance not just their own selves, but it could develop, and this is being promoted, as I understand it, across the country to help finance Patriot activity across the country. So this is where I'm going to tell people to come. I've been asked where somebody can get precious metals. People are awakening and realizing what's going on that haven't prepared for anything. So this is where I'm going to send them. I don't know where anybody can get any other silver at this point, because who I did has passed on. Members will be able to buy silver at wholesale prices. Okay? There's no upfront cost to get a position, and you get it. You'll have like 25 days to watch it develop behind what's the back door, your back wall or back office, whatever it is. So it's easy if you want to do family tomorrow and then learn on it, family and friends. But I would put a link up, John, and commissions. I didn't even look at that structure, and that's all at the back office. So there will be a commission structure so that anybody that gets into this through the NLA, which is what's going to happen right now, is going to put commission and help fund the NLA. Okay? There's a video. It's a brief video. I think it's 9 minutes. So when you go to when you click on the link, it's going to give you two options, to watch the video or register now. To register. Do either one, because it's not going to cost anybody, as I said, till midnight tomorrow night. This person has been a silver dealer for like 9-10 years and has really been watching this company. So that's why I'm encouraging to grab the free membership. If you don't want to do it, that's fine. But if it turns out as this unfolds that it's going to be something beneficial, I think it is. And you'll get a link if you register, you'll get a link. Each person that registers will get a link. It's www.mintbuilder.com. Then there's a / and a 6-digit number that will be your own ID number. So you want to make sure that people know that your number is what's at the bottom. As long as you go and check it yourself initially, it'll come up at the bottom. And that's what will register any commissions that go through that number. So that's why I'm saying you want to put one on the website.
Okay.
Doesn't cost anything, and it'll help bring that in. Now, my number is 271726.
Okay, 271726. Got it.
Correct. Mintbuilder.com.
MintBuilder.com.
Correct.
Okay, so I'll go out and take a look. It sounds like I will sign up, because gold and silver is something that people should have, and that's something we should push, you know, gold and silver, which is real money. And so if people can get an opportunity to get something at a good deal and also make a little bit of a commission off it, and at the same time be able to help fund what we're doing through that process, that's a good thing. So I'll go out there
correct.
I'll put your number in, and we'll put a link up, and then we'll put the word out tomorrow and let people know that it's a free sign-up for until midnight tonight, and after that it's going to be $199, you said, I think?
I that's what it appears. There's not a whole lot at the website that I found, but I didn't spend a whole lot of time looking.
Right.
I had just finished reading all of this stuff when I got off and realized it was after 10. I was waiting, sitting here waiting for the clock to bring me to 9. It was 20 after 10. I was like, oh my God. So, that, you know what, it could have been sooner than that, and I looked up then. But I'm not even real familiar with, and I think that it's still unfolding. So that's why I said...
Yeah, it's looking for a launch 24 days from now. So they want to build up a membership and get things going to, you know, get it ready for the actual, you know, launch day.
That's correct. And this is something that people can... It appears that you can share your link with family, friends. I do know people that are looking to for some place to invest. They want tangibles. And they want physical assets. So at this point, I think this thing is offering like a monthly membership for somebody to buy something every month, which would be, I haven't seen that anywhere. Like rather than somebody having to put bulk money up if they want to get some silver, they can buy it, you know, and this would just be a retail customer. So somebody can go to the website, see your link, and click on it and decide to do something like that, and the NLA will get commission. Okay, so the same thing is, that's why I said, if people sign through the NLA and they do this for themselves, it's going to make for themselves. But I think if I'm understanding the little layout they had, it's also going to give a kickback into the NLA. So...
Right, I'll look at it. It sounds like it might be a multi-level thing, and that's okay. That works well if you, you know, and this is really a nice thing to do it with, you know, real money. Wow.
Correct, and I think it provides the opportunity for each of us as a member to be able to buy wholesale for ourselves.
Yeah, I was connected to something similar to what you're talking about, and you know, you purchased one silver dollar every month, and but you know. I did get involved for a little while because I do collect silver, but you know, it was kind of richy. They were really they're projecting that the coin is going to be something special, and the value is going to raise. And they claim that they have a good insight and they have a great track record of picking coins, and you really, you know, escalate in its price far above the weight of, you know, the cost by weight. And that's something I definitely wouldn't want to get involved in anymore because it just doesn't work. But just the coin itself, for the value of the coin, that's what we want. We want to get silver, you know, and gold too, if you can afford gold. But everyone can afford a few dollars in silver every month, and it's the best way to save anything.
My understanding, and this is global.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so. That's a really good thing. I know a lot of people from around the world come to the NLA website. This is in pre-launch, so I'm kind of excited.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to see people coming to the NLA from other countries and clicking and joining up and spreading it in their country and helping to fund the NLA and the American freedom. The freedom movement we've got, we have no choice. It's our time. It is our time.
Well, we
Thank
appreciate
you.
It. And if anybody else has any great ideas of this type, you know, let us know and we'll consider it. But it's got to be a product that's real. Food is good, you know, especially food, storage food. We do have one of those things up on our line. And of course, gold and silver we used to have, but we lost Paul. And this might be the answer to finding someone. But maybe there's another good product that people should have. And we just don't want to really get involved with just any kind of a product. It's got to be something that makes sense in the Liberty Movement. So, okay, with that, we've come to the end of... Well, hold on. We could do one more call. We got 1 minute. Margie from North Carolina, go right ahead. And thanks, Mary. Margie, go right ahead.
Hey, hello. This is Margie from North Carolina.
Hey, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fine. John, I'm a member of I'm a welcome committee in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And I called this, he says he's a new member of, I got his name, new member in North Carolina. So we got to talking, and I don't really think he's a member, but he said he was referred by Roger Dalville. Dowdell, I think he's from Florida.
Yeah, that's from Florida.
And he said, who's your leader? I said, well, he's one of the founders of National Liberty Alliance, and his name is John Durash. I said, well, he's a bar attorney, isn't he? I said, no, he's not. I said, wait, where'd you get this information? He's not sure. He thinks some other people have said something to him, but he says he would like you to call him if you don't mind. He's trying to do the grand juries nationwide also. It's called peoplesgrandjuries.org.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, well,
I'll give you his name. Stephen, NOSBIGS.
Okay, peoplesgrandjury.com. That's well. Go take a look. Yes. Look, if he wants to talk, he should come here to the open forum here. We're here every Monday from 9 to 12. You know, there are lots of people, especially the last 3 weeks to a month, I'd say. A lot of people have been calling, and I haven't been answering. I have to ignore the phone because it's at that point I just can't. I'm so busy, I just can't answer the phones. And so,
sure.
You know, but everybody has that opportunity, if they want to talk to me directly, to come to the Monday night program here for this open forum, and they can ask any question they want in public, and we encourage that, and we'll respond as best we can. And if we have someone that we really can work in some kind of a partnership, if they are compatible with us to what we're doing and our principles, and we want to be very careful in how we do those things, but, you know, maybe we can somehow join forces. At least, you know, there are some different websites and people doing really good things that we'd like to share with other people. And so we're going to start adding other Liberty Group links on our site. I'm not sure how we're going to do it. Depends on how many we get. But we may develop a page for that, or we might do something down at the bottom on the right side of our page. I don't know yet. But in any event, you know, this the one thing going with the electric companies dealing with the problems with the smart meters, there's a group that really, I think they're coming out of Canada, if I recall. We've had one meeting with them already. We're preparing to have another powwow with them, so to speak. And we like what we see, what they're doing. They're dealing with the commercial problem with commercial business. So, you know, as long as you don't take that against the judiciary, you work the commercial thing, you know, it's a safe thing. But anyway, if you really want to get rid of the smart meters, as a matter of fact, I'm going to exercise it myself. But I have a little more information before I, you know, make a for sure decision on that, along with others. But we want to be very careful in who we, you know, tie in with. And if we discover that there's anything wrong with any group that we start working with, we will cut them off immediately and post the reason why. We have to do things with integrity, and we have to be consistent, and we have to be careful. You know, we have to do things.
Yes,
well.
That's what I said to him. I said, John Durash doesn't. You know, we don't want to go to we don't want to go to jail. And
right.
he says, well, yeah, I understand. But if you, I went and looked at the, I check everything out. I went and looked at the website, and you know, he's got some good information on there. But he said, you are law.org. I think the lady on the last call last week, she was talking with you about, and I looked up his information too, about a month ago. He says you are a man or you are a woman in the courtroom, and he's pretty good, and he's Christian, but he had that on his website too. You are law.org, and your site, our site, he does promote our. National Liberty Alliance on URLaw.org.
Yeah, well, you know, anybody that really wants to know about us, by reading the front page of our website, we'll give them a clear picture of who and what we are, at least a good general picture. And we try to, you know, explain as much as possible on that front page. And it's really loaded with a lot of stuff. And, of course, we got videos and stuff, and some of it quite long. Quite a few videos, but that front page really gives a good appreciation to anyone who wants
yeah.
to come.
Yeah, the welcome tab is real good. It is. It's good there, but he didn't spend enough time in it and all. But I don't really think he's really a, you know, that's what I'm finding. A lot of people, you know, we do need to go through all these. I think we have 6,000 members.
I just went out to the site, Peoples, P-E-O-P-L-E-S, Grand Jury, G-R-A-N.
Jury's, I-E-S.
Oh, gee. Okay. Yes. This one's for sale. PeoplesGrandJury.com is for sale. And
yes, correct.
It looks like they want a couple thousand dollars for it.
Yeah, I saw that, too. I'll spell it for you. JURIES.com.org.
Okay.
So they're trying to do he's trying to do grand juries, too. And he put UR. He's got that on there, urlaw.org or something. And that man's good, too, like I said, but he's got National Liberty Alliance. He's talked about, you know, National Liberty Alliance, the guy, urlaw.org.
Is it people with an S or just people, people grand jury?
Peoples.
Yeah, I'm getting sure not down. Let me try one more time. I got P-E-O-P-L-E-S.
Correct.
G-R-A-N-D-J-U-R-I-E-S dot com.
And dot org.
Oh, dot org. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's coming up soon.
You should get it.
Org. O-R-G. Okay, enter.
Should get something
okay,
now.
Okay, yeah, something came up. People Common Law Grand Juries and Resources. Okay. All right, we'll take a look and see once. Look at...
He says if I'm wrong...
We definitely will not partnership with anyone because we've been very, very careful to... You know, we don't want to be control freaks, and we've had people who claim us to be control freaks. We're just being careful.
Yes, yeah, that's what he said. And I said, whoa, I said, wait a minute. He said, John DeRash is a... he's a bar attorney. I said, where'd you get that information? No, he is not. And you know, we're very careful. He's very careful. We don't want to go to jail, you know, and do things like that. And he just is not informed. Someone else is saying this, and you know, he's referred by Roger Daldale, which is in Florida. You know, he used to be a member.
Yes, he used to be a member. You know, look at and again, you know, we control what we're doing because we want to make sure it's done right. There's so much garbage out there, and when we get people
right.
coming in with ideas and thoughts and they become to a point where they become part of the process of deciding, you know, what's going to go into the education and the answers to questions and different things, if we're not all on the same page and when we're not all coming from the same place, we're going to contradict each other and it's going to become a problem. The big thing that we're trying to do is empower people on the grassroots level. And we're just here to facilitate an education, communications with the local people on the local level amongst themselves, an education, communications, and for them to organize themselves and always be a place where they can come and get good, solid information. And whenever we discover that anything we're doing or understanding or teaching is wrong, we will correct it because we're more interested in the truth and that kind of a reputation than just being a place that's doing whatever they're doing and not being concerned about checking these things out. And sometimes it's
right.
hard to you know, bring people around from this man on the land business, which again, I was very much into that until I started to see some problems and contradictions, and then I started to investigate a little deeper, and I discovered, wait a second, there's a lot of problems here. The enemy is well entrenched in all of that teaching and all of those things there. And there's so much garbage. You know, there's a lot of good stuff on websites, but there's also a lot of garbage on the same websites. We try to stay very, very pure, you know?
That's right, John. We're doing it right, you know. And you know, we have to be patient. I mean, law, common law, you know, everybody wants a, you know, quick decision, a quick answer. You know, there's not, and you got to be careful on how you do it and everything. And you just have to be patient. It's all about education. Education is the key to save America.
That's correct.
And this guy, no one has the numbers like we do. You know, we have, what, 6,300 members, something like that. But
yeah, it's almost, we're coming up on that 400 number now, so it's almost 6,400. And you know, look at, you know, sometimes I remember when we didn't even have 60 people, and so we started from scratch with nothing and built very slowly as we continued to grow. And, you know, we get a little anxious sometimes. We wish we could go quicker. We want that state.
Sure.
I remember when we were looking, just trying to get members in every state, you know, and finally we'd get one state, and then we'd have 10 states, and then 30 states, and, you know, step by step. And then we started looking at the numbers, and they started to really collect, and we broke the 1,000 and the 2,000 and the 5,000 and the 6,000. And sometimes we look at it, we get a little antsy, a little impatient. We'd like to go quicker. But you know what? Growth in what we're doing too quickly is not a good thing. It's not healthy.
That's correct.
Sometimes it's not healthy to grow quick. We need to grow slow and get form that education and get people to develop a sense of patience as part of the process, the principles that we need to have, honor, justice, and mercy, and it extends from that patience and many other, you know, godly attributes. So
that's right.
You know, so. Again, I'm very pleased with how long it took to us to get to where we're at and what we've got and what we've accomplished and how pure we have been able to remain.
You That's know, the word, pure, yeah, pure.
Okay, with that, we went 12 minutes over.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you. Now, but with that membership, I really don't think we have that membership. It needs to be... you know, updated, because a lot of people probably left, you know, we just need to update it.
Well, yeah, there are people that are falling asleep. But the membership is the membership. That's an accurate membership. You know, the ticker goes on, and if someone comes out, you know, that one will drop down one. So it is what it is. But in every membership of anything, you always got people who fall asleep. It's just the nature of the way things are. But you know what? We're hoping to wake them all up. They joined for a reason to begin with. We need to, A, remind them on why they joined, or let them find out and remember why they joined on the one hand, and also get them excited on where we're going now with this Sheriff's Project and where we are today with our project also in the courts. You know, we've got over 100 papers filed in the courts. And, you know, we're doing a lot of stuff.
That's right. We're the only one that's doing it. National Liberty Alliance. No one else has come this far. I mean, you know.
And it took us many years to do it, and I'm good with that, you know.
2014, is that when started, John?
I think it was 2014. I think that's about right, or 2013. I think it was the end of 2013 when we moved into the judicial process. And, you know, we haven't abandoned or forgotten the political process. We do have a political side of our website, which is political without the politics, even though the word politics means the science of the political process or I think it's science of political process. I mean, but that's a lie from hell, of course. Politics is a problem. We just need to get involved in the political process and be educated and make an educated decision and understand the powers and the authorities of all of these elected positions. And that's what we're going to teach on a very heavy level in the near future. Once we get into the courts, we're going to put a lot into the other side of the website. But we do have a lot already there, and we encourage people to run for committeemen and different things. But, you know, there's no real power in there. But if they do it right, when we get power, when the people get power back in the courts and we can take back the political process, those who went through the proper way to become a committeeman will be acknowledged, and they can go into the court to get that power and authority to take it away from those who really are not true committeemen. They haven't done it the proper way. They haven't been elected into the process. It appears as if they have, but they haven't. And we'll get more involved in showing people how that works, although we have a lot of that information already written up on our website on the political side. You know, our website, we anticipate a huge, huge growth once we get into power, and we the people get into the power and start getting the authority back. The growth will be phenomenal at that point quickly, and there'll be huge, huge mega changes in the website, giving a lot more information and be a lot more interactive and so on. We don't need that right now, but we don't have the money to do that yet right now. But once we get in, And we get the grand juries moving across, and then each grand jury, you know, the grand jury administration, shall I say, in each county, there's 3,134 counties, so you've got to have that many administrations. And each administration, you know, would be given money that they would be getting from the county anyway. They'd have to have a web presence and different things and information, education, and courses in order to qualify. And I mean, there's a lot involved in this. And that being the case, you know, a couple of $100 from each one of those coming in would be a tremendous amount of money, enough to really do a very, very, you know, sophisticated website where anybody would be able to come in, put in their zip code, and they'd find out who they're, you know, what are the political positions available, you know, who's your senators, who's your senator, who's your councilman or your congressman, you know, even down to the town and city and village or whatever you're in. You know, all the people running for office, and we will describe the duties of all of those offices. And then anybody for those offices, as long as they've taken our constitutional course or taken some, or show somehow that they know the Constitution, then we would allow them, we would encourage them, if they're running for office, to post a 500-page essay on, you know, why people should vote for them. And and then lead to their website for more information on that individual, so we can make an educated decision and also have an education and an understanding of each one of these political positions, what their duties are, who do these, some of these people have the opportunity to appoint into power, you know, and then you can trace also when there are problems, you know, you get someone who's who's been appointed, well, who appointed them, because that person has to be an elected individual, and that's the person that's going to pay for not fixing the problem of people they've appointed who are breaking, you know, the law ultimately. So, you know, again, people need to understand the political process and all of these offices as much as they need to understand the judicial process and how things work and the power and the authorities of the juries.
That's right. Yes, that's right.
And now, then we can have politics or political process without the politics, shall I say? You know, we're also going to teach people. We've already done it in New York. It's a matter of executing it, and we can't do it until we win in the courts. But it's going to be overnight for us in New York because we've already rewrote the party rules on both parties here in New York, both the Democrat and the Republicans. We came together to do that. And we would, those people that were actual elected committee men were the only ones at that that convention, and which we had in Kingston quite some years ago, and so that is ready to just put into power and authority at that moment once we get in, and we need people running for committee men, and it will take the people who are now the committee men that are frustrated with the system, and bring them in and show them how to run for the a real elected committeeman, where their vote really does count, and the people on the grassroots level actually decide who they want, not to be told who they want, the choices of this criminal or that criminal, you know?
So
All of this people need to get involved with, and again, you know, this is not really overwhelming when you start to really look at this. It's really a lot of logical, simple things and things we should know, because after all, political process and the judicial process, that is really what governs our future. And if we don't get involved,
right,
then someone else is going to govern our future for us, and it's not going to be pretty.
That's right. It's not going to be pretty.
Okay. We went 19
minutes. Well, thank
minutes
you,
over.
John.
I'm going to bed.
Well, thank
you. So.
Thank you, John, for all that you do, okay?
You appreciate it. Thank you.
Do a good job.
Thank you. All right, well, God bless everyone. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And everybody get involved and get ready to get moving on our program as soon as we're ready. And don't forget, you know, support us, what we're doing. $5 a month or more. Some people can afford 10, 15, 20, or maybe more, but whatever you can afford on a monthly basis to support what we're doing, if you believe in what we're doing, help us reach the goals and help us save America. Good night. Thanks for coming.
Good night.